I am sorry, but your baby is blind,
the doctor says.
The problem is your child cannot see well enough to keep up with classroom work,
the teacher says. These are words a parent never wants to hear, but you know, it doesn't have to be the end of the world. The American Council of the Blind is here for you and your child. We will ensure that your child meets blind people who have succeeded in getting their education and who work as lawyers, teachers, automobile mechanics, and in virtually every other profession. For more information or a membership application, call 800-424-8666 or contact us online at www.acb.org. The American Council of the Blind, forging new frontiers for our future.
The Blind Handyman is moving.
Well, I really like the show, but I've never found it moving.
The Blind Handyman is moving to Friday night.
Friday night.
Beginning July 18th, you'll hear The Blind Handyman on Friday Night US and all day Saturday.
Same lame humor.
Same great cast. John Patterson.
Philp, our creator and producer, is having trouble with his earphones.
Tom Houston.
Also, if you're interested, I would be willing to offer a $20 gift certificate.
Don Shaw.
Hey, Pete from Long Island. How are you doing this afternoon?
And Phil Parr.
We've had rain now for, seems like, 2 weeks.
Whippersnapper.
The Blind Handyman.
Starting July 18th, now heard on Friday night.
40-plus shows and still teaching blind folks how to fix stuff.
I think all you blind men are handy.
ACB Radio.
Hi, this is Jonathan Mosen welcoming you back to the Berg and our coverage of the 42nd Annual Convention of the American Council of the Blind. It's nice to be back with you, and indeed it doesn't seem that long since we were with you the last time, since the session finished about 9 hours ago. But here we are again. It is now 8:10 on Monday morning, the 7th of July, 2003. The forecast for Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania is for scattered showers and some possible thunderstorms at a high of 82 degrees. It's around about 70 degrees outside at the moment. Today is Transportation Day on the calendar, and that is sponsored by IBM. Let's look at what you can expect to hear today. The entertainment, which we'll switch to shortly, is from Gilbert Bush of Boston, Massachusetts. At 8:30 a.m. we are due to begin, so I guess the ballroom will fill up a little bit with people having such a late night last night. It's taking a wee while to fill. President Chris Gray will call the convention to order at 8:30, and then we'll hear the invocation from Father Walt Ridzen. He's of St. Paul's Seminary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. There'll be some ACB business after that. That will include the final credentials report, presented by Chair of the Credentials Committee, Judy Cannon. Last night, you heard the roll call of affiliates, in which it was made clear who the delegate, the alternate, and the representative to the nominating committee were. And at that time, the number of votes that each affiliate is entitled to cast was announced. In ACB, under the Constitution, there is a maximum of 25 votes. This was a constitutional provision introduced to ensure that the very large affiliates don't swamp completely the smaller ones, while also allowing for a little bit of affiliate based on membership strength. At 8:45, we'll hear the executive director's report that will come from Charles Crawford of Silver Springs, Maryland, and Charlie will report on what's been happening in the office of the American Council of the Blind over the last year and some of the issues of note. At 9.05 a.m., we're scheduled to hear the report from the officer of the day, who in this instance is Steve Spiker, the first vice president of the ACB. And then at 9.15, we begin to hear presentations on the theme that we're focusing on today, transportation. We begin with transportation, ACB on air, land and sea. We hear about the transportation survey, the results are in. Alice Richards, who is the co-chair of ACB's Transportation Task Force of Brunswick, Georgia, will present that. At 9.45, and obviously these times are always approximate, we hear about talking signs technology and automated stop announcements. Makes a big difference when you can be clear where your destination is. Jeff Moyer of Cleveland, Ohio, who's the talking signs man, he'll be part of that presentation, as will Mike Godino, Freeman Award winner, and of course candidate for treasurer as well, of Baldwin, New York. At 10 a.m., we hear Project Action, Transportation Grants and Activities. That's from Donna Smith of Arlington, Virginia. 10.15 sees a presentation on Transportation Equity Act Reauthorization. That comes from Melanie Brunson, who of course is ACB's Director of Governmental Affairs. She's of Vienna, Virginia. We'll take a break at 10.30. And, of course, at that point, we will answer any emails and questions you have and share any feedback that you may like to offer during the course of today's proceedings. You can send us an email at convention@acbradio.org. That's convention@acbradio.org. And you can also use MSN Instant Messenger to reach us at that same address. If you have MSN Instant Messenger or Windows Messenger, just add us to your contact list. And then you'll see us come up online and you can send us instant messages. At 10.45, we move away from transportation and hear a segment that's always popular at convention. We hear the talking book narrator. This year, it's Gordon Gould of New York City in New York. That presentation lasts 30 minutes. And then at 11.15, we hear the international speaker, Enrique Perez. He's the president of the International Blind Sports Association, and he is from Madrid in Spain. At 10 minutes to midday, we hear about the Recreation Zone 2003. That, of course, is presented by Oral Miller, current board member, former president, former executive director. In fact, the first executive director of the American Council of the Blind. He's in Washington, D.C. We'll have some announcements at 11.45, and then at 12 o'clock, we go into recess. Let's take a look at some emails that we've received since we were last on the air. We're saying hi to Cindy Vega of Utah, who's unable to be at convention this year, and she says she appreciates the ACB radio coverage. So thank you, Cindy, for getting in touch with us. We appreciate you tuning in. A little further afield, John Ray is listening in Canada. Thanks for your suggestion, John. John suggests that we may like to summarize what we can expect to hear on tomorrow's broadcast at the end of today's one. That's not a bad idea, and we'll see if we can manage that. In past years, one of the reasons why we haven't introduced that innovation is because they've often had to pack up the ballroom for affiliate meetings in the afternoon. There is so much space here at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh that that is not a problem. So we should be able to manage that. So thanks for the suggestion. Sally from Nebraska. Might not be. From NEBR. Nice to hear from you, Sally. I'm not sure what NEBR is. Is that Nebraska? Probably. Nice to hear from you. And also Jacob Joel. Good to hear from you. Regular contributor to the ACB lists. He says, congratulations to Mike Godino on his Freeman Award-winning article, which Jacob says he particularly enjoyed. So thanks for all that feedback. Keep it coming at convention@acbradio.org, on MSN Messenger or email. The exhibit hall will open at 11 a.m. this morning. If you're in the Pittsburgh area, do take up the opportunity to come and take a look at the latest in technology. There are some interesting exhibitors this year. It will remain open until 6 o'clock tonight. And during the course of the exhibit hall being open, you'll be able to hear coverage from there on ACB Radio Interactive at interactive.acbradio.org. As usual this year, the American Council of the Blind is publishing a daily newspaper. It's called the Keystone Courier this year, and it contains information about what's going on at this amazing convention where there is so much to see and do, and meetings and social activities. And I guess the one thing that seems to lose out at these conventions is sleep. There's so much going on. It's available in Braille. And once again, the National Alliance of Blind Students have organized for the Keystone Courier to be delivered to your door, if you wish, if you pay a small delivery fee. So for 1 week in a year, you don't have that feeling of opening your hotel room door in the morning and finding an inaccessible newspaper out there. You can actually find an accessible Braille newspaper waiting for you to be read. The Communication Center's been working hard, gathering information. And also, it offers an opportunity for people who wish to advertise specific products to place advertisements in there. There's a telephone information service that complements the Keystone Courier, the newspaper, and that is called the Convention Ear.
Hey Frank, it's not working.
That service is up and running as well and can be dialed internally from the Western. And by using the keys on your touch-tone phone, you can obtain a range of information from there. We will now patch you through to the entertainment and give you a chance to hear some great piano playing that's been going on. Even played a brilliant Beatles song. This is Gilbert Bush of Boston, Massachusetts. And I reminded that if you want to be in touch with us, it's convention@acbradio.org. We appreciate all the positive feedback.
I can't talk. I'm talking into it. It's not on. 1, 2, 3. Ladies and gentlemen, there are three aisles in this room. The states are listed on the side of the table. You'll find the names of each of your state delegations. In that sign, you will find, in the bottom right-hand corner of the sign, you'll find Braille with the name of the state. That whole row and behind that sign is your delegation, as it always was when it was on the sign on the back of the chair. So the same kind of thing happens as always, except that this time the sign is on the corner of the table facing the aisle. There are three aisles in this room, and the microphone, there are two microphones in each aisle. So look for the delegations on the sides of the tables. You'll find signs there in large print and Braille down in the right-hand corner of the sign. Now let's listen to Gilbert play some more. way to do it, than have the panelists sit at the microphone.
Right,
so there's not to
right.
move around.
Right. Listening to the Piano Artistry of Gilbert Bush this morning.
Well, thank you.
And he's going to continue to play. I just want to make sure you all know that the signs to your delegations are to the on the corner of the desks, on the corner of each table. Look for your delegation on the sign. The signs are brailled. There are three aisles. There are two microphones in each aisle. So look for each one of those microphones. If you need an assistive listening device, please go to the information desk. We're at room 306 outside this hall. Go to room 306 where Pam Shaw and the information crew are and pick up your assistive listening device.
down today so he can perform his ministry. Otherwise, he's not allowed to do anything.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you need an assistive listening device, please go to the information desk at room 306 and sign one out with Pam Shaw. You're listening to the music of Gilbert Bush, and we'll be beginning in a few moments.
Yes, right. We seem to have a problem, which is one element.
About 2 minutes. You guys ready? Ladies and gentlemen, that's Gilbert Bush. Gilbert Bush from Boston, Massachusetts. Thank you very much. Let me ask you to come to order now for our first Monday morning session. Everybody get well rested last night?
No.
No? And I understand there's a lot of our colleagues who are coming over, struggling their way through the elevator situation. So we may have a little bit of disturbance and disruption as people come in, but it's one of those situations that just can't necessarily be helped. Now, to begin this morning, let me introduce to you Reverend Mr. Joe Costco of St. Winifred's Church, Diocese of Pittsburgh, to give us the invocation for this morning. Reverend Costco.
I ask you to bow your head. As this council strives to improve the well-being of all blind and visually impaired people, we pray to you, O Lord, who are the supreme truth, and all truth is from you. We beseech you, O Lord, who are the highest wisdom, and all the wise depend on you for their wisdom. You are the supreme joy, and all who are happy owe it to you. You are the highest good, and all goodness comes from you. You are the light of minds, and all receive their understanding from you. We love you, and indeed we love you above all things. We seek you, follow you, and are prepared to serve you. We desire to dwell upon your power, for you are the King of all. O Master, holy and incomprehensible God, you bid light to shine out of darkness. And after giving us rest in the sleep of night, you have raised us up to glorify you and petition your goodness. Receive us now, worship you, and render you what thanks we can. Grant all our requests that will advance the purpose that you have brought us together at this time and in this convention hall. Make us children of your light and day and heirs of your eternal good things. O Lord, in your great mercy, be mindful of all present here praying with us, as well as all our brothers and sisters in need of your love and help on land, at sea, or in any place of your dominion, and us as well, the power to promote the greater understanding and the capabilities of those who are blind or visually impaired. With humble and contrite hearts, we honor and glorify your name forever and ever. Amen. And please know that I will keep you all in your daily prayer, in my daily prayers, in whatever endeavors that you pursue. God bless you all.
Joe, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Really
thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, now to present what I believe will be, but if she corrects me, that's fine, but what I believe will be the final credentials report. I bring back to the podium from Quincy, Massachusetts, our credentials chair, Judy Cannon.
All righty. That wasn't me you just heard from. Thank you, Chris. The credentials report was presented last evening at opening session. Affiliate votes were announced by our secretary as determined by the credentials committee. Some affiliates were penalized votes. I wish to thank them for the acceptance of the credentials decision. No appeals have been received by the committee. Mr. President, I therefore move adoption of the credentials report.
All right, it's been duly moved and seconded to adopt the credentials report. Any calls for the floor?
Hearing none, we'll go to the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Thank you very much. All right. Now we're prepared as an organization to transact business during the week. And I just want to say something right away so that we're on the same page about this. As you all know, we are in a room that has got to be the biggest room I have ever been in for an ACB convention. It's a wonderful room because we have the chance to have the tables and to be spread out and be able to put our things in an orderly way around us. I do have some minor concerns about how votes are going to sound from up here at the podium, because we're pretty high up in the air up here, and you guys go a long ways down that room. So let's work together when we take the first few votes, and I ask your patience. We'll learn how to do this. Maybe you can shout louder than usual, or maybe you can, you know, say something more quietly than usual. But remember, as time goes on, when you want to address the audience, to get to a microphone, because it may well be that we can't hear you up here if you're in the back of the room, no matter how loud you yell. I'm not sure about all that yet, but it's a concern I wanted to share with you up front. Okay, having done that, we're not going to transact business at the moment, because we have this morning the report from the Executive Director of the American Council of the Blind. Let me introduce to you, ladies and gentlemen, someone who I'm sure you've probably all met, you've all heard from before, unless you're very new to ACB, our Executive Director from Silver Springs, Maryland, ladies and gentlemen, Charles Crawford.
You bet. Right over here, Charlie.
And you can stand up pretty straight. This mic's a hot mic.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
See what I mean? Yeah. Thank you, Mr. President. And I certainly do appreciate the opportunity to speak at the... I know that I'm talking to the truly faithful, because you're actually here after getting to bed so late last night and getting up so early this morning. So the good news is that I have the certainly the warriors of ACB in the audience, and the even better news is that you're probably half asleep and won't remember what I said anyway. I only have a few minutes to try and compress into a year's worth of activities into a very small period of time. So I'll just get started and hopefully be able to finish this pretty quickly. But I have had the opportunity this weekend to do two great things. First is to see my son get married. And I have to tell you that to see all the love and admiration for each other and the feeling of family that happened this weekend was a real testimony to the fact that the future is certainly strong if we have children like we saw this weekend, and I'm real proud of them. And I hope that all kids in America enjoy the same kind of opportunities to have really true caring people around them, such as my son had this weekend. And so I just want to say hi to Steve and Caitlin and hope you enjoy Hawaii. Warren, make sure it's good for them. I also had a second opportunity this weekend to spend some time reading the ACB history. And it was a very profound and moving experience for me to have read those early years. And the period between 1950 and 1961 was truly an amazing period in the history of the blind of this nation. And in that time, they constructed a new structure, a new home for the people, for the blind people in this country. And that home was built with all the caring and love of a generation of blind people who knew what it meant to be continuously discriminated against, to be downtrodden, and yet to have a sense of themselves strong enough to go beyond the day and to look into the future and to know the kind of world we could build together if we only got together and expressed ourselves as a people. And so they built a building. That building is called the American Council of the Blind. And there are many pillars to that building. Pillars of people such as, well, Durwood McDaniel, Marie Boring, M.J. Schmidt, or Hills, as it used to be called, I guess. Kathy Skivers. People who are with us today and people who have already gone before us. And all of those people had a common dream. A dream that blind people as a population of people could come together, talk together, reason together, disagree and agree, and come to consensus. And from that mighty process of democracy to reach a point where they understood and where they utilized that dream and the power of a people to change the face of how blind people in this nation are treated, how we treat each other, and how we treat the rest of the society around us. There are physical pillars to that building. The National Office is one of them. The Presidency and the Administration is another. The BOP is another. And the membership is the building. There is no physical structure, only the energy and determination of this organization to speak as one and to make the dream of blindness in America be a dream that everyone wishes to live, and in fact does live. So it's our job at the National Office to keep faith, to remember, and to always be true to what this council began as and continues to be. We have kept faith because the early founders of the American Council of the Blind said they wanted an action-oriented organization, not one that stood by and watched things happen, but one that made things happen. The National Office is pleased and proud to have the services of Melanie Brunson and Krista and Barbara in our governmental and advocacy affairs. They have worked diligently throughout the course of this year to make sure that accessible voting is not only just a promise on paper, but a reality in the voting booth. In true coalition with others, ACB has not only gotten the legislation passed, but also money into the coffers of the states to ensure that those states have the economic wherewithal to begin the process of making voting, secret balloting for blind people as well as everyone else, a reality. That took a lot of work, and we congratulate the Advocacy Affairs Unit. But it's not just voting that we've sought this year. As Chris mentioned last night, the ideas that came from the American Council of the Blind, from the blind themselves, as to what constitutes a real education for blind kids and what ought to be in the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, what needs to be in that act, will be in that act because of the efforts of the American Council of the Blind and our allies. We cannot stop there. If a child is educated in our nation but is not given the skills to work, is not given the college education, is not given the appropriate Braille training, is not given the kind of placement services they need, in short, is not given the opportunity to contribute to our society through meaningful work, then we have not reached much of anything in our goals, and we have not kept the faith with those who started the American Council of the Blind. Remember who they were. Reese Robrand, George Card, Durwood McDaniels, lawyers, people who had the opportunity to earn lots of money on their own in their own private practice, but gave of themselves and their spirit to create this organization. We owe it to them to make sure that rehabilitation is not just a shell, it's not just a promise, it's an avenue to real employment with real choice for all blind people, and we will make it so. In just a few minutes, you'll be hearing from the Transportation Committee. The National Office is pleased to have worked with the folks in that committee to ensure that there is a real reauthorization of the Transportation Act, one that not only builds highways, but builds pathways for blind people to make sure we have accessibility to our environment, an environment in which we can go from one place to another without fear, and to once again be truly mobile and independent in our society. We will make that happen in the Transportation Act, and we will address the quiet vehicle so that no blind person ever steps off a curb thinking there's nothing there when there is a car. We will do that, and you will help us. Keeping the faith with our founders. One of the primary reasons why the American Council of the Blind came into being was because Chick Tinbrook had the notion that he could go off and build an office for himself on his own property with Federation money and never had to tell anybody. He could put people on salary and never have to tell anybody. He could spend the resources of the organization because he had it in his infinite power to be able to decide when and where and how money would be spent without the membership ever knowing. That's wrong. And the American Council of the Blind was born with the notion that we are accountable to you, the people. The national office has spent a great deal of time this year, hours and hours, in developing a budgetary system that not only tells us how much we have at any given time, but where the money's going, how much of that money went where, who spent it for what, and that information is available to the membership. This is an organization that is accountable to its members, and the national office delivered on that dream. Keeping the faith. Keeping the faith means also staying true to the free discourse and to the free speech of all blind people in this country, and especially members of the American Council of the Blind. I'm proud to say that Penny and Sharon in the Braille Forum unit have put out that magazine faithfully and truly, and you've received it at your doorstep with a wide variety of opinion and even controversy, but nevertheless, the truth as all blind people see it, so that the membership decides in the end what is the reality and what isn't, through the benefit of a free exchange of ideas. Congratulations to the Braille Forum. You once again proved that you are the magazine of choice for blind people in this nation. Keeping the faith. Lastly, let me point to the open doors of the national office. We receive as many as 5,000 phone calls a month. And we have three staff primarily responsible for picking up the phone and by the end of the day taking some aspirin. But every time they pick up that phone, it could be a member. Could be a member of the American Council of the Blind in need of some assistance from Melanie, for example, with a credit problem or a discrimination problem. Could be somebody calling Terry from one of the affiliates asking about certain information they need or giving information to the national office so we can put it together for you in terms of listings and information. Could be somebody from Penny Reader asking about an article or wanting to get an article in the paper. And it could be like last week. One person. Probably just a lowly member nobody knows the name of, who runs a small business. And that small business to him is as important as the building I talked about in building ACB. It is his life. It is his dream, his endeavor. It is his livelihood. It's how he supports his family. And despite all the issues of blindness, he put that business together. He got it going. He keeps it going. And now special interests from outside want to close him down. I can tell you, we are keeping the faith with the founders of this organization that no blind person is so unimportant that they don't deserve the help of every other blind person to make sure that their dream, that their reality, that their future is the same as ours. And we will fight for that man's business because he's our brother, and when he succeeds, we succeed. The national office is just one pillar of a great building, of a great building. And in keeping the faith, all of us in this room now have the opportunity in convention to talk with each other, to share with each other, to listen to the issues, to think beyond personality, to get bigger than an individual and to care together so that this organization becomes even more every day the fulfillment of what so many sacrificed to do for all of us. Thank you.
Hey, Charlie. Nice job.
Well, I'm awake now. Charlie, thank you very much. Great job. I would now like to introduce to you the chairman of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee for the first reading of some amendments that we're going to vote on this year. Let me remind you before I turn the podium over to the chair that today will simply be a reading of the new material. There will not be debate and there will not be discussion either by the membership or the chair, simply a reading so that you can be informed and think about these issues. And then tomorrow, or I would assume tomorrow, but perhaps Wednesday, we'll come back and have the broader discussion about the issues. Having said that, I'd like to turn the chair over to our Constitution and Bylaws Chair from Chicago, Illinois, Mr. Ray Campbell.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Mr. President. Before I launch into the reading of some amendments, I just have two things I'd like to do. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge my great committee that is helping me out this year. That committee consists of Frank Cuda from the great state of Washington. There they are. They're awake. Erlene Hughes, I should say. I'm going alphabetical order here from the great state of Indiana. You can't top Washington, Indiana. Don Thompson from the great state of Hawaii. Aloha. And we did have one additional member of the committee. Unfortunately, he's not able to join us this year, and that is Scott Stanger from the great state of Utah. Scott was not able to be with us this year. That presented a double problem for us because we are required to have someone on our committee from the Credentials Committee. And therefore, I spoke with the Chair of Credentials and John Fleming from Mr. Blue Skies from the great states of Oregon/California, he tells me, is going to be stepping up and assisting us from the Credentials Committee. So thank you, John, for that. The second thing I'd like to announce is that due to the fact that a couple of our committee people are going to be going to the nominating committee tonight, it says in your program that we are supposed to meet tonight. That meeting has been canceled. However, this is the day, today is the day that you can, the deadline day that you can submit amendments to the Constitution and bylaws to our committee, and you can do that. You can either find me, Ray Campbell, in the Illinois delegation during this session, or you can contact me in room 1918, 1918 of the Westin, anytime today, before about, let's be reasonable, folks, before about 10 o'clock tonight. And if I'm not there, leave a message, and I'll make sure that I get whatever it is that you want to submit. This is your document, this is our document as an organization, and it is your opportunity to amend if you so desire to do so. Let me start off. As Chris stated, we're going to have three amendments this morning that we'll do a first reading on, and at this time, as Chris said, there will be no discussion. So let's launch right into this. I'm going to do three of them here. By the way, copies of these will be produced and will be available at the information desk as soon as we can get them through the communication center. We'll have Braille and large print copies. I don't know if there are actual copies of the Constitution here, as it currently reads. I've been asking around about that. Does anyone know if copies were brought here or shipped here? Okay, we'll find out about that because certainly you should have an opportunity to pick those up as well. Anyway, let's launch right into this. And the First Amendment I'm going to do, it's on Braille page 30, bylaw 3, section C. I'm going to strike out the, we're going to strike out the entire section and replace it with a new section C. The current wording of section C is C. Dues for sustaining members shall be $25 a year for individuals and $50 a year for organizations. The proposed wording is section C. The annual dues for sustaining members shall be divided into the following categories: $50 or more for supporting memberships, $100 or more for bronze, $1,000 or more for silver, $10,000 or more for gold, and $100,000 or more for platinum. That is the First Amendment. The next amendment is on Braille page 5, Article 3, Section A, subsection 2. We're going to add, quote, and entities, quote, after the word individuals, and we're also going to add, quote, and those persons holding junior memberships at large, close quote, before the period at the end of the subsection. The current wording, 2, non-voting members shall be the individuals holding sustaining memberships. The proposed wording is 2, non-voting members shall be the individuals and entities holding sustaining memberships and those persons holding junior memberships at large. And finally, we have the Third Amendment that I'll read this morning. This is on Braille page 25, bylaw 1, fourth sentence of the bylaw. We're going to add, quote, accompanied by 1 year's dues, close quote, after the word, quote, therefore, close quote. Current wording, any person who has not reached the age of 18 years may become a junior member at large by completing an official application, therefore, and designating his her preferred edition of the Braille Forum. Proposed wording is, any person who has not reached the age of 18 years may become a junior member at large by completing an official application, therefore accompanied by 1 year's dues, and by designating his, her preferred edition of the Braille Forum. Mr. President, that would complete the reading of amendments for this morning. Thank you. You're not on the air there.
Thank you very much, Ray, for that report, and I look forward to taking action on it during the week. Okay, a couple of things I want to mention at this time by way of announcements. One is that I want to make sure everybody is aware that every evening we're going to have speakers' receptions. And I want to remind you that the idea is for each affiliate to select one or two people, if they wish, to come to the reception. If the delegate wants to come, or the president, or however you want to handle that in your affiliate. But it gives you a chance to come and have a brief time to possibly meet and talk with those people who spoke on the program. So bear that in mind. Typically during the week, the speaker's reception will be in the president's suite in room 2623. However, tonight the reception has changed because of the Alaska party, which will be in 2623, something I know you always like to go to, and they needed the bigger space. So the speaker's reception will be in 2322. Speaker's reception tonight in room 2322. It begins at 6 p.m. As is the custom in ACB, each day we like to have one of the officers have the opportunity to interact with the membership and to conduct meetings. And this year we have also instituted the period of time for each officer to provide a report to ACB about their committees and their work with the organization. I would like now for the remainder of the morning to turn the lectern and the program over to the first Vice President of the American Council of the Blind. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm welcome to Steve Spiker.
Thank you, Chris, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and friends in ACB. Welcome to what will probably be a most interesting and challenging week in some respects, and certainly an enjoyable one given the preparedness of Pittsburgh for us and the great work of the host committee and the Pennsylvania affiliate. Give them a big thanks every chance you get, because it has been my great privilege over the years not to be responsible for arranging an ACB convention. Cynthia and Carla work enormous hours with enormous energy, and they always want to hear about things that aren't going well so they can fix them, but whenever possible, do them the courtesy of suggesting a fix to help get that process started. And whenever you get the chance, let's say thank you to Cynthia and Carla, too, for helping all the stuff go right behind the scenes. I raise these issues because of some of my views concerning the role of a vice president. Now, when I was second vice president, I wasn't quite sure what my job was because, in my experience, most people are so focused on their first vices that they have little time left for their second vices. But now as the first vice president, I find out that people in ACB are indeed passionate about a great number of things, and that occasionally those passions collide. On Thursday, there will be some leadership training offered in one of the breakout sessions, and we'll have a chance at that time to talk a little bit more about the role of a vice president. But for your consideration, especially if you are a vice president or have one or two with whom you work closely, I would suggest that that position is as important or as negligible as the president makes it. The potential for that job is great, because any president needs all the help he or she can get. And when that team works well, great things can happen. Let me talk for a moment about the committees I've had the privilege of working with this year. And I believe they're important committees, although they function primarily at the convention. There is a considerable amount of work, in some of them at least, which goes on before. Our Credentials Committee this year has already done its job. And they did it so well that I only had about two or three phone calls from them the whole year. And every one of those phone calls said, we're on track, here's what we've done, we're on schedule, we have some issues, but they're being dealt with. Is there anything else we can do? That's a wonderful kind of phone call to get from a committee chair or other members on the committee, and I thank Judy and I thank her committee for making the liaison job with that committee so effortless. I can say the same thing about scholarships as well. Patty Slaby and her crew have to sort through enormous mounds of paperwork, and that's the good news, because it means that ACB is in touch with the future through the talent and energy of a number of very accomplished, enormously talented, and highly energetic young people and older people who are involved in academic endeavors of one type or another across this country. The energy in our student group is enormous. Focusing that energy, even the students might agree, is occasionally challenging. We are fortunate to have a number of good leaders and potential leaders in that group, and we are still looking for ways for there to be a closer connection and more enduring relationships between our student affiliate and the scholarship winners. We do not put some of the conditions on our scholarship winners that other organizations do, because this is an organization about consumer choice. But we do welcome them, and we do invite them to stay with us and become involved, and many of them do. There are, I believe, several presidents of ACB who came to ACB principally through the student group. And so to any students in the hall, we say, stick around. Good things, really good things can happen. Now, with the scholarship committee, of course, when they have all this paper come in, they have to go through it, and the national office has an enormous job in that respect. Then they get all the paperwork out to the various subcommittees so that the subcommittees can review the various applications and make their decisions. Then the logistics have to occur of bringing the winners to the convention, organizing the funding for all of that, making the travel arrangements, making the disbursements of the scholarship checks, making sure that the scholarship winners have a good time while they're here, that they are introduced to the convention and to their peers and to the rest of us in as comfortable a way as possible. The scholarship committee continues its work right through the convention, working with the winners as individuals and as a group. And please join me in saluting the work of our fine scholarship committee. Our nominating committee is a rather special institution in ACB. When I was new in ACB, I did not understand why those meetings are closed. Various people have counseled with me across the years about that, and perhaps their views are beginning to have some influence, because there are times and places when people must be able to speak without fear and must be able to say what they believe, what they have observed, in the confidence that the only people who will hear that are the people being addressed at the moment. Our nominating committee has that function, and for that reason, we should salute each and every person who agrees to serve on that committee. It is a very serious and a very important job in ACB, and we are fortunate this year to have chairing that nominating committee a woman whose abilities are beyond question, as well as is her commitment and her love of ACB, Catherine Skivers. Let me now talk about the Constitution Committee for the moment. One of my early introductions to ACB was to serve on the Constitution Committee, and one of the other members of that committee was Vernon Daigle that year from our friends in Louisiana. Vernon taught me a lot about ACB, about courtesy, about style, and about class during those committee meetings. Since then, we've been fortunate to have very talented people serve on the Constitution Committee. This is a job that some people wouldn't come within 1,000 miles of if they could help it. And it is a job on which other people absolutely thrive. You have to be a little quirky to enjoy dealing with constitutional questions and getting the words right, putting the pieces together. But what you can tell is if someone took your Braille note or your CCTV apart and left you to put the pieces back together, everything would have to go in the right place for it to work. And so I think we should be grateful that there are people who care about the fit and finish of our lives together, the structure we have in this organization, how the various components work together, where the checks and balances should be, what the lines of authority are, just how is it that we make decisions, how do we welcome people to the organization, and if necessary, how do we say goodbye. So Ray Campbell is our chair this year, as you've just heard. And as with the other committee chairs I've mentioned, it's made my job very easy to know that the work of this very important committee is in such good hands. So please let's give Ray and his committee a round. All right, even, that's well-deserved, the committee, I'm sure. There was a dog who wanted to participate in the color guard ceremony last night, as I recall. We welcome the dogs, too, to the convention and hope that they find this a good home. And that when we step on them, we say, excuse me, please. Now, one final word. This past year, and in fact the past 2 years, have been challenging times to be a first vice president in ACB. This is so because 2 years ago, there was an election which was hotly contended in certain quarters and fiercely fought and eventually decided by you, the voters. After that election, there was fallout from certain things. And I don't know what the facts are because I was largely oblivious to the whole thing. You will have to search a long time to find someone in ACB who is more politically naive than I am. That's one of my virtues, right? I consider it so. But in any event, there were tensions. And some of those tensions flared at various times across the 2 years and got in the way of our doing productive work. One of my roles, since I was not involved in whatever it was that made people so unhappy, was to try to advocate for our life together in ACB and to bring people together and to find ways for us to move ahead. That work still continues. We have made progress in that area. But the key to any vice president's job is the commitment of the president and the board to work as a team. No vice president can do his or her best job without that commitment. I believe we're making progress. We still have work to do, in my opinion. This is a wonderful organization. We thank you all for being here. We look forward to serving you in the future in whatever capacity you decide to place us. And it's just great to be here. Thank you very much. Every day is a day of discovery, and I've just discovered that the president is not here at the moment. So, one of the nice things about being blind is that you learn very early on to deal with surprises, right? So this is all right. We're all veterans at that, and this is not a problem. So let's open up the book and see what's on the next page. Everybody turn with me to chapter 14. Let's see. What city are we in and what day is it? Any help out there? All right, thank you. I appreciate that. Getting from here to there. First, we have to get to the next item. But it looks like a getting from here to there day by land, by sea, by air, by idea, by effort, by inspiration, by long hours in committee meetings, by advocacy, by surveys, by all sorts of means we can imagine. We're going to talk this morning about transportation with some really committed and dedicated folk, and I think you're going to enjoy this. Who's first up? We see that, is Alice Richard in the house? And if so, according to my program, she's our next speaker. So we would ask all of the transportation, Alice Richard is up next, and we have Talking Science Technology. If that person would come forward, find a spot up here at the table. And we also have a couple other speakers before the break. So if those folks would come forward. In the meantime, do we have Mr. Gene Barton in the house? We do. I think it might be time for a door prize, if you wish, Mr. Barton.
Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
We'll draw the first of the door prizes of many, and it's from the North Dakota Council, and it's a basket of, there we go, that's better, a basket of food products from the North Dakota area. Draw my name, please.
Regina Pence, Camp Hill, Pennsylvania.
Is our winner in the house? Is she here?
Is she here? Oh, no. Well, he'll tell us when.
How about another one?
Shall we go to the next one?
Let's do.
Next.
Leroy Saunders, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Is Leroy up this morning? I owe a debt of gratitude to Leroy because I was walking out of the convention hall once during a session, during door prizes actually, which is not a wise thing to do. I do not advise that course of action. But Leroy reached out in the aisle and snagged me by the arm and said, "Spiker, slow down, you just won a door prize." So I owe Leroy and Pat dinner sometime, should they care to collect.
Is Leroy here?
Is Leroy here? He's here.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
You're walking away from us, Leroy.
Yes, sir.
Come back here to Pennsylvania.
While Leroy's on his way, let's pull one more, please, and then our speakers are here and we'll begin.
We have a portfolio from United States Steel Company and...
How many shares was that?
Oh, it's... you'll have to come up with those. Okay, you want to give us the name?
And the name is...
The name is coming.
Lewis Johnson, Richmond, Virginia.
Is Lewis here?
Lewis here?
I know he has a fan club over there, but is the gentleman with us? All right.
No Lewis? No Lewis that we've seen so far.
Let's draw another
name. One more name.
Draw another name, please.
Lynn Corral, Anchorage, Alaska.
All right.
Lynn
is
here?
Lynn here?
Yeah, she's raising her.
She's here.
Okay, good enough.
Can you take that trip, please? Thank you.
Congratulations to all our winners, and congratulations to the folks who've worked so hard on transportation this year, because it sounds like we've made some pretty interesting progress. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
Everybody, ladies and gentlemen, everybody understands that we all need to speak from microphones, so when people are looking for them and have said so, we don't need to encourage them further.
Number 7.
How do you get this thing on? Oh, there we go. Steve?
Please identify yourself.
Hope from Maryland.
Okay, missed the name, sorry, on the mic.
It's Hope.
Yes, okay.
I have a question concerning everybody in this room. Being that this room is so large, I think we could all use some information on how to evacuate in case of an emergency.
All right. We will take that under consideration. And
thank you.
Let's consider if, let's see, if someone can contact Cynthia and have her confer with the appropriate people. Let's try to make some sort of announcement about that right after the break, because we may need that additional time to put that together. Okay, can a mic... The acoustics in this room are certainly challenging. When mics are not working and someone calls for the floor from out yonder, it is possible to hear them up here, at least the ones I've heard so far. Yeah, that's
Mr.
good.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Okay, you have a mic now?
Mr. Chairman?
Please identify yourself and state your business.
This is Christine Hutchinson from Colorado.
Yes, Kristen.
And I would like to, I don't know if I'm out of order or not, but I was told that I would have to make a motion on the floor, but I would like to just explain myself as quick as I can.
But would you, before you explain, would you tell us what it's generally about so we can determine whether it belongs here or whether we should continue with the speakers and bring this up at a time when we know we're on schedule?
Yes, sir. It's in regards to possibly obtaining a plaque representing the American Council of the Blind at the Crash 93 site in Pennsylvania here.
You may want to speak with the either the Resolutions Committee or... we could think about that during the break.
Okay, because President Gray told me to bring it up here on the floor.
All right. Very well. We are not yet in the area of new business.
Okay. Will you just holler at me or I'll do something? But
no,
thank you.
Come up to the podium at break and let's
okay.
talk.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Alice, do you have a microphone? No, not yet. You want to come over here? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Alice Richard.
Okay, thank you. I want to first say that the topic or title was The Results Are In on the survey, and they are, but before I start, I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you to President Gray for giving me the opportunity to work with a group of people on an issue that I am very passionate about, and if any of you do know me or have talked to me, you realize that, and that is transportation. I'll talk to you all day about it, and yes, I do get excited.
But as an alternative, consider 20 minutes or so.
Pardon?
As an alternative to all day, let's consider 20 minutes or so.
Okay. So, but I wanted to go ahead and acknowledge the members of the committee who have worked, and that is Ray Campbell from Illinois, Lynn Coral from Alaska, Donna Smith, who's now in Virginia. Am I correct, Donna? I always forget where you're living. Gail Cross from Florida, Erlene Hughes from Indiana, and my co-chair, who is not able to be with us this week, but who has helped us and helped guide us and work with us on this, Ron Brooks, who's now from New Mexico, but now in California. With the survey results, I can tell you this, guys. As those of you who filled it out know, and that's the first thing I want to say, is thank you so much. Because that's the beginning, finding out where we are and what the issues were. So all of you who took time to fill out the survey, we appreciate that. And as you know, it was long. But that's because, as we know, transportation is a complex issue, especially when you're talking about all types of transportations and all types of places where people live. And so far, from the preliminary results, I do want to say that the results have all been tallied and they are in the process of being generated as far as figuring up all the totals. So I don't have all those, but I can tell you a little bit. And the little bit that I do know is, number one, we all agree there's issues concerning transportation and we need to fix it. But what we found out and what some of the preliminary results are showing is that a lot of us are interested in transportation and want to make it better, but we don't know how. And that is that we're not sure, one, you know, how our system even works in our community. Especially if you're, like, for example, in a rural community, we're not even sure, do we have a transportation committee? Do they even discuss it? And they do, but we're not aware of that. As an organization, a lot of us in the membership don't seem to know what that is. So I can tell you that probably one of the things we need to do is to find out and figure out a way to get each member to understand your community and what the needs are and who it is in that community we need to talk to and go and talk to them. The other thing we discovered is that, yes, people in transportation, when they have a problem, especially with paratransit systems, overall they seem to be thinking, well, the service is pretty good, but when I have a complaint, the biggest issue seems to be that when we go and we give a complaint, nothing seems to be done about that. So for preliminary results, I would say that's probably an area we need to work on, because apparently the system that is in place currently for filing complaints when you have a concern with paratransit, it just seems that once you file that complaint, nothing's being done about it. So that's what it tells us. And I'm just going to close now by saying that that with the workshops that we did at mid-year and again the other day, the two biggest things, and even from some of the survey results we've seen, are that a lot of us are concerned about transportation. And yet, you know, nothing seems to be happening. And then we found out that apparently that's because a lot of people just don't know how to do it. And a lot of us, even though we care about transportation, we're not even sure what all the laws, and they are complex, as you know, and you will be knowing with the Reauthorization Act, that it is complex. And so a lot of times even a transit person will tell you they don't even know all their rules and regulations. And so what we need to do is figure out a way for us so that we can speak and go to our communities and ask for the things we need, like sidewalks, so we can get to the bus stop. Or pedestrian signals, audible signals, so we can get to the bus stop. And then when we get on the bus, some kind of system that really works so that we know when we're getting off the bus. And for those of us in the rural areas, we just like to figure out a way to get where we want to go. So to do that, what we need to do is, first of all, make a commitment that we really do want transportation for all of us who are blind and visually impaired. And to do that, we need to find a way to educate ourselves on what the laws are, find a way then to go back to our communities and find out who the key people are in those communities, and with the help even from the national level, to go to those people and teach us. So, you know, what is it I need to say? Tell me, guide me. And then for us at our own home roots, grass level in your community, to go and start being active. And on that, I will close, except to say also that as a result of some of the preliminary survey results, and with the fact that reauthorization of the Transportation Equity Act is coming up, the committee has put together a resolution, which hopefully will be coming forward, you know, in the next few days in those regards. Because as we know, that's where the funding comes from. And that's where we're going to have to really be proactive, especially when times are hard and all we keep hearing about are cuts. So be prepared and realize that that's where you're all going to be able to come in at your local levels with this reauthorization, is we've got to get the funding and make sure it goes into the things we need so that we can get where we need to go. Thank you. Yeah, if they have any, I'll try.
We have several transportation speakers this morning, and we're going to try to take just one or two short questions for each one as we go through. So consider that and get to a mic if something calls to you in the way of a question. Are there questions for Alice? Is anyone working toward a mic on this? Okay. Let's go on then. I believe our next speaker is Jeff Moyer. Yes? Jeff, you're on.
Thank you. Question. You do have a question?
I can tell you, friends, everybody ought to have the experience of the acoustics up here. It's pretty interesting. So Chris was absolutely right. Bear with us as we get used to what we can and what we, you know, what's easy and what's difficult. In that case, for example, we heard someone in the back of the hall, but not the words or not what's going on. So, okay, we have someone on a mic.
Good morning. My name is Tom Jackson, New Jersey chapter, ACB.
Yes, is this question for Alice? Or?
Yes.
Okay, Alice?
Yes.
Okay.
Being that she was at the Saturday workshop, of which it was magnificent, I thoroughly enjoyed being there for the 3 hours. And one of the things mentioned at the tail end of the meeting, I think it was, might have been by one of your ACB staff people, Melanie, was that, and I want to see this go forward because you touched on it yourself. We, Rallis here touched on it, education. We need to be educated on transportation, especially the funding of education. Because funding is a source, and funding, when we talk to our local mayors and county, in the case of Jersey here, we set up with freeholders. We need to be able to understand funding. We need to be able to say to them, we'd like this such and such, and they'll immediately say, well, you know, how are we going to pay for this? We ACB members need to understand the funding, money. Follow the money trail. We need to know that. And so it was touched on at the workshop that Melanie, I believe, mentioned it, that she would like to see all the different chapters throughout the country and the educational series done on transportation and
right.
Educating us all. And and she mentioned that the money is needed to be found to provide this education. So I would like to propose that as a priority here.
Okay, let me respond to that, and thank you. And I meant to mention, yes, at the workshop, the one thing, and I talked about is education, and I will say that Melanie and I talked after the workshop because, like I said, we realized that. And so what we are doing, Melanie and I are going to get together next week, and the two topics that we thought would be good, and if we can figure out a way to get people in the different affiliates involved is to do like a workshop, and the workshop would include two things: basic training ABCs on the ADA and transportation, because how can we tell others what we expect them to do if we don't know what the rules are? And the other was the funding issues. And so just to let you know that Melanie and I are going to talk about that next week and see what we can do to actually try to figure out a way to do a workshop, whether it be a phone conference where we get lots of people involved, or do something, though, that yes, so that we can educate those members of you in the chapter. And let me just say this, and then I'm going to sit down so we can move on, is I told everybody the other day, and I'll say it here again now, the first thing you need to do, and the way to get started if you're sincere and really want to be involved in transportation, is go back. And if your affiliate does not have a transportation committee, form one.
Jeff?
My name is Jeff Moyer. I'm a member of the Ohio affiliate, and I am the Director of Community Relations for Talking Signs Incorporated. I addressed you about 21 years ago on quite a different technology development effort. Talking Signs is not a development effort at all, although it's constantly under development with new products. I was talking to you then about the Talking Opticon, and I would just report to you that those of you who were involved with that, Chris Gray included, although that did not result in a product, it did result in the best synthetic speech ever developed, and it wound up being the voice for Dr. Stephen Hawking. So ACB has another feather in its cap. Today I'm going to be talking about talking signs, addressing the four P's, which is number one, plaudits; number two, progress in installations; number three, products, new developments; and number four, what is planned, a proposed project that we're very excited about. First of all, plaudits to ACB for a decade of support. You recognized 10 years ago when talking signs was entering the corporate period, when we were really beginning to put things into manufacturing and get them into the real world. You recognize the power of the technology, and for 10 years you've been a strong supporter of this wayfinding technology. So thank you to Charlie Crawford for his ongoing involvement with Ward Bond, president of Talking Signs, and thank you to all of you who've supported it over the years. Number two, progress. Where are we in terms of new talking sign installations? The good news is there are some new products, including a sign for buses that help you, that allows you to know immediately what bus is coming when it's 100 feet away through your talking sign receiver. Every bus in Lansing, Michigan now has talking signs. Those of you who are fortunate enough to live in Lansing may have experienced that already. The 20 blind students at Michigan State are enjoying those on a daily basis. Colorado Springs is planning to put them on all their buses, and they're also in the buses in Rehoboth Beach. So as you're talking to your local transit company, This is one of our access provisions. It is tremendously important for us to have immediate instant access to the information about what is the bus that's coming or that's parked at the curb. Number two, about the installations, we have put new talking sign installations throughout the bus stations, the bus terminals in Phoenix, Arizona. CNIB is planning to put them in their major headquarters or their new or their headquarter building in Toronto. In San Francisco, which is the home of talking signs, there are now talking signs being put in permanently at two of the BART stations on the Muni extension at 14 station platforms. And we're continuing to see the development of talking sign installations in many other places around the country. But those are just some highlights from the last year. In terms of the new products, there are several things to report. Number one is last year there were 10 personal talking sign systems called the Finder that were given away at the convention, and that was not quite ready for market, and at this point we will be shipping in July to the 10 people that won last year their Finders, which is a personal talking sign system, a transmitter and a receiver. The bus sign that I mentioned that is being installed everywhere is new, and we're very excited about the fact that it works wonderfully well, and we have terrific cooperation from bus companies as they see that it's being installed with both the sign systems for the sighted public as well as the GPS systems you'll hear about later. We also are very excited about having developed in an engineering prototype status something you've been asking for a long time, which is a hands-free talking sign receiver, one that is worn on a pair of glasses. And if luck will move in our favor, we may have one here by today or tomorrow, but it's right now hung up in customs. But it's a very exciting system. I've used it, and it's, I can't say it is like seeing, but it's very thrilling to move your head a few degrees and see exactly what the sign is you're looking at when it's broadcasting into your privately into your ear, so you have your hands free for other purposes. Thank you. Finally, the Marquee, which is a new talking sign, a stripped-down model for storefronts so that malls will be able to have store identifiers. As you walk through the mall, you can readily find not only what the store is, but where the door is to the store. So the Finder for the personal system, the Marquee for stores, the bus sign, the hands-free system, and, of course, the standard talking sign system that's been installed all these years. Finally, I want to talk to you about a planned project that we're very excited about. I was talking to my congressman, who is on the Transportation Committee, about talking signs and our desire to see them get support. And he said, well, what do you want? And what occurred to me is what we don't have anywhere is a seamless transportation application where you can go from a bus to a train to the airport to find the transit station to navigate the building. We don't have talking signs in that kind of comprehensive installation anywhere. And I suggested to him, and we're now proposing, the Washington MAP project, Model Accessibility Project. We're proposing that every transit system in Washington, D.C. and the surrounding areas, throughout the metro system, on every bus, a national airport, in all the metro stations, all the bus stops have talking signs so that we can, for the first time, have independent and free access to public transportation. You know, I remember 28 years ago, I was standing on a corner in Berkeley when I worked at the Center for Independent Living, and I was looking at the first curb cuts, and the idea was, is this going to work for blind people? We were offsetting them in Berkeley so that we still had the curb as an identifier. That didn't happen as curb cuts went in nationally. But I thought to myself what a foolish idea this is to think that there's going to be government money spent on putting curb cuts in so people in wheelchairs can move freely about the community. Today, of course, there are curb cuts at every intersection virtually, and people who use wheelchairs for mobility have a kind of access that's unbelievable and would have been unthought of 28 years ago. We're our own worst enemies when it comes to thinking about things like talking signs. The difference between our equal access and equal access concerning race or gender is that ours does cost money. And it's not there's nothing wrong with saying it's our turn to have public money spent so that we can have equal access to freedom of travel and the other things that we need for education and employment it does cost money, and we need to stop apologizing for it and say, this is equal access, and it's our turn to be accommodated. Thank you. And in keeping, if there's a question.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Deb Versteg from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And we have a transit system that in a few years is going to be going to stopping at bus stops only and not at corners where regular passengers are standing, even though they're on the route. Would talking signs be an application for this or not?
Talking signs can be installed in bus shelters that are wired, but they do take electricity. And typically at a bus stop mid-block, if it's just a pole, that's a problem that we have not solved. But we're keeping track of solar technology and battery technology. And as that technology evolves to the point that you can have a solar-powered talking sign transmitter that doesn't require wiring, then we'll have a solution, but we don't have it today.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
This is Patsy Jones, South Carolina. Jeff, all this is very interesting, and in our state, about the only public transportation you're going to get is the bus system if you're lucky. And I guess when I go back and talk with my people about anything like this in our state, how much does this kind of stuff cost? Because that's the first question that's going to be.
Yes. When you're talking about buses, the signs cost the bus company $2,000 per sign, roughly. That's in comparison to $25,000 to $40,000 for a wheelchair lift. So it's less than one-tenth of the cost of the accommodations needed for our brothers and sisters who use wheelchairs. So it's, yes, there's a cost, but it's a very modest cost in comparison to the cost of other public transit accommodations.
Jeff.
Ladies and gentlemen, in consideration of our schedule, we do have a second speaker also on talking signs. And Mike Godino now will address you and, I believe, introduce a colleague of his. Mike?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Steve. Many of you know me as a representative from Clever Devices. I was asked by the owner of Clever Devices about a vendor stand this year at the exhibit hall, and I said to him, you know, Pittsburgh is one of your properties. Rather than an exhibit booth and let people listen to a suitcase, why don't we get a bus? Well, we have a bus. And I'm happy to say that it starts running today. It's going to take you to the mall. You can ride the bus and hear next stop announcements being made in the bus. So you'll have that opportunity this week. I hope you enjoy it. So right now I'm going to turn it over to Chris Weeks, who's more knowledgeable in what's happening nowadays in the realm of talking buses. He's one of the product managers for Clever Devices. Here he is, Chris Weeks. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning. It's great to be here, and I've been asked today to take a few minutes and talk to you about the state-of-the-art of automatic voice enunciation systems. If you think about state-of-the-art, there are really two things that drive state-of-the-art, and they are, number one, of course, technology development and the implementation of that technology. Number two, the thing that really drives this is the marketplace itself and the demands that the marketplace requests and desires. And in that regard, you have very much a huge role to play in the state of the art and the continued development of the state of the art in this industry and others that will affect this. You know, when you think also about state of the art, at least I was thinking about in school, I was thinking about in church, I was thinking about entertainment, I was thinking about in almost every area, certainly also in medical care, the state of the art that has elevated in those industries has happened the same way that it's going to happen here in transportation also. And it's going to happen for the same basic reasons. Technology is going to uplift. People are going to require it and demand it and request it, and it's going to happen. And that's the way I think that we are where we are today, because we're standing on the shoulders of others that went before us. People are going to have to stand on our shoulders and in the next generations as we continue, and I think that's critical for all of us to realize. I may be in the technology business, but I really do understand how technology gets to market, and it takes all of us together to make this happen. when you think about accessibility and the importance of accessibility, really, in order for something to be practical and usable, that's the only way that you're really going to have these opportunities to move forward and enjoy the quality of life that's really available out there for you. For every single person, there's a lot of quality of life available. It's getting to it a lot of times that really it becomes a challenge. And I love those opening comments that went before us, because transportation is very critical to being able to have the quality of life increased. And if you have problems with access in your public transportation system, particularly with your buses and whatnot, there are things on the market today. We're not talking blue sky, but there are things on the market today that can really make a difference in every single town. To a large degree, by the way, that's why Clever Devices is in business. And, you know, you only got to go back, I guess, what, 10, 20 years, and to really see the impact of Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And the impact of that has been certainly to make things get better and better. These products are really a result, in part, of those acts and the direct action of many people in this room. I do have a system in a suitcase, by the way. Mike said we have a bus, and we do have a bus. But I was certainly planning on doing this. This is the, we'll take about a second here, because that's about how long it takes. And those of you who have heard this, if you can, it's in a suitcase. And it's comprised of a series of pieces of equipment. And there's a controller.
Please do not stand in the rear door well.
There. I guess you heard that. And what the driver would do, he would take his touchpad. You can maybe hear this. He presses a route. By the way, this is a route that's in Washington, D.C. And we're going to go ahead and we're going to select this. And this is what you'll see. The interesting thing is that when the system is running, you have speakers on and outside the bus. And that makes
Welcome aboard Metrobus, Route 30, destination Friendship Heights Station.
You can see the voices are professionally recorded. I think that's important. Again, if the door opens.
Welcome aboard Metrobus, Route 30, destination Friendship Heights Station.
And that's important because a lot of times you'll have a stop that's serviced by more than one bus or more than one route, certainly. When you go to, for instance, the specific onboard announcement that will play when you're in the bus.
9th Street and Constitution Avenue.
Again, it's 9th Street and Constitution Avenue.
9th Street and Constitution Avenue.
And the system isn't designed just for people that are blind. There's also a large LED sign so that those people that may be deaf also can enjoy the benefits of easier access. And it's certainly not just wheelchairs and ramps, but you've got to be able to know where you're going, why you're, you know, if you're on the right bus. And I think that realizing, someone said earlier, find the money. These systems, for the most part, are purchased by transit authorities all around the country. D.C., we're in a town that has one. Pittsburgh, Chicago, and whatnot. And that money, by the way, comes from, for the most part, the federal government, and is purchased by the bus. When they purchase the bus, it is included as part of the bus. And the majority of that money comes from the federal government. So that should hopefully overcome some of those local issues where the budgets are tighter, okay? But be aware that that's certainly how this stuff gets on the buses, and thank you very much.
A question?
Ladies and gentlemen, I understand this is a topic of immense interest to everyone. And so what I'm going to do, since I've talked with our next two speakers, and they tell me in all good faith that they need every minute of their 15-minute segments for each of them. So what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to ask all of the transportation speakers to stay up here, get down in front of the podium area here at floor level, and that people with questions can possibly come up and talk to them during the break, so that we can keep moving and break for everybody at the appointed time. I appreciate your indulgence. I wish we had more time for questions, but we may need to do it on a somewhat individual basis. Our next speaker, I believe, is present. Is present, and here she is.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, good morning, ACB. Everybody still awake out there? Okay, good. I'm Donna Smith, and I'm here today representing Easter Seals Project Action. I'm very pleased to have served on the Transportation Task Force with Alice and Ron and all the rest of the task force. It's been a very interesting year. We've had a lot to look at and review and consider and try to take action on. But I'm also very pleased that it's in fact part of my job. It is my job to work on transportation issues regarding people with disabilities, 40 hours a week, at least 40 hours a week. So I'm very proud to be here today to talk to you about, Project Action. Project Action, the action part stands for Accessible Community Transportation in Our Nation. Sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? All right, what we do is we try to promote partnerships between transportation industry and the disability community. And so I want to take just a minute to do a very unscientific poll, and we can test the room acoustics while we're doing it, okay? This is definitely just a voice vote. We don't need a standing vote. How many people here have issues regarding transportation? Okay, now how many people here have ever considered, you don't even have to have done it, but ever even considered calling Project Action to find some possible solutions for those issues? Okay, I think that according to this unscientific poll, I can say we have an issue here we might need to address. And this is an issue that Project Action is very aware of. We've actually been in business for about 15 years. We are funded through the Federal Transit Administration specifically for the purpose of looking at issues surrounding transportation and people with disabilities, looking for ways to enhance accessible transportation for people with disabilities. That's our mission statement. And the in the past, it's gone through a number of directors, and it's gone through a number of changes with regard to exactly how we focus our energy and our resources. But one of the things that has become apparent over the last few years, and that Project Action has taken steps to actually remedy, is that we have very high visibility in the transportation industry, but we have almost no visibility in the disability communities. And we really want to fix that. So currently, if transportation industry has a question about the ADA or about disability advisory boards or any such thing, there's no doubt they know who to call. When I asked that same question at the American Public Transit Association conference, I get a very different answer. But currently, we're not that well known around disability communities, and we really want to fix that because we work with both sides. It's an issue of bringing both sides together to find solutions. So who are we and what do we do? That's what our boss wants to know, too, by the way. We try to give him satisfactory answers. Okay, first of all, we offer a hotline, a free, toll-free hotline that you can call anytime if you have a question. It's a technical assistance hotline. So if you need to know, if your paratransit company is has instituted a new rule or has a policy going on that you're not sure if it actually is required in the regulations, if they're meeting regulations, and those are some difficult regulations to sort through by anybody's standards, You can call our hotline and ask your questions. And we have two people who do a very extensive and very thorough job of answering those questions and providing you the resources that you need. So call our hotline. And just so you'll know, in the Keystone Courier, there is an ad that's the title line on it is People on the Move. Today, in today's paper, it's on page 23 in the Braille copy. But it's been in the paper for the last couple days, and it gives all of our Project Action contact information. It gives our 800 number and our website. So look us up. We also have a clearinghouse for publications. Actually, everything from a little handy-dandy bookmark that gives ADA rights and responsibilities to full-length publications like a handbook on the requirements under the ADA for motor coaches, to a training curriculum in a number of areas, one of them having to be having to do with operators calling out the stops. Unfortunately, that one doesn't come with any magic dust that makes them do it, but at any rate, it is a training curriculum that companies can use to help get their operators to understand the significance of it. And we also have a number of videos that are available, too, that address either transportation in general or specific aspects. And that's just a very small number of the things that we have available. But please give us a call. Check out our website. See what's available. And it's all free. So, and it's all available in any format that you want it. So just let us know what you're interested in, and we'll be glad to provide that. We also provide each year a certain amount of funding, usually $400,000 to $500,000 worth of funding for particular projects. And this is the way we get a lot of our products for the clearinghouse developed. It's also the way we do some research to get some idea of census studies to determine, you know, what the issues are and what are some possible solutions. The process is actually already well on its way for this year, what you need to know here is that it's available, and if you get on our mailing list or if you check our website regularly, then you can get in the stream of that when it comes around next year. But we do a call for statements of need, which is then followed by a review of those statements of needs, where we decide what kind of RFPs, what kind of grants we're going to release for the upcoming fiscal year. And then we actually put those grants out, put those RFPs out, and take in submissions for those things and review them and then grant them. So now that part of the process is still available. We've done the statement of need part. We have reviewed the statements of need to determine which ones we should give priority to with regard to funding. And so now in about August, maybe September, we will be posting RFPs, which is a call for people to submit or agencies, nonprofits, to submit proposals for receiving those funds. So you might want to check out our website for those kinds of things. The main thing, again, to remember is that it is a process that is done every year. And if you get on our mailing list, you'll be notified as to when it happens. The other major thing, and this is probably the most pertinent part of what we do that I think that the council affiliates around the country can truly take advantage of, and that is our training and technical assistance program. And this is the part that I'm involved in directly. We offer two training programs on a regular basis every year. One of them is called People on the Move, and it addresses issues of using all available transportation options in your community, being aware of them, learning how to assess what's there, what's available, what it costs, who can use it, under what circumstances can it be used, when is it the right option to choose, those kinds of things. And we get pretty innovative with this. We actually kind of tailor this training session based on who's going to be in our audience. And So we spend a good bit of time finding out who those applicants are, what their needs are, what the transportation availability is like in their communities. And so we kind of tailor this training based on who we're giving it to. So it can look a little different from time to time. We have five of them coming up this year. The first one we're about to have in San Diego within the next couple weeks, so that one's kind of closed at this point. It's being done in conjunction with the Association for Persons in Supported Employment, so we hope that one goes well. But we will have four more. We have one in St. Louis, we have one in Portland, Oregon in August. We have one in St. Louis in the middle of September. We have one in Savannah, Georgia, in October, and that one's being done in conjunction with APRIL, which is the Association for Programs in Rural Independent Living. So a lot of the Independent Living Center staff will be attending that. And then we have one in December that's for teachers, because one of our goals is to get the information out to students with disabilities at an early age that public transportation is an option. It's out there. It's not, you know, we spend a lot of time and energy training our young people with regard to how to be safe and independent in the use of a vehicle if they should be able to drive. But we do little to nothing in the school system to try to train people with students with disabilities who will not be driving about how to get around and use transportation safely and independently. So we're trying to change that a little bit. And in December, we're going to be giving this training specifically for teachers. Okay. Our second training program is our mobility planning services. This is a pretty complicated program that, if you're interested, you need to call us and let us talk with you about it at length. But it's based around getting a community team together to look at the issues of transportation. We strongly believe that it is a community-wide issue. And so we try to pull together a team that includes a disability advocate, a transportation provider, a disability service provider, and then someone with fiscal responsibility. So it could be someone from the county, someone from the city, someone from the Metropolitan Planning Organization, to all get together at the same table and begin to look at what are the issues. Our primary message here is that we need to change the view that transportation for people with disabilities is a special service. It's a service that we need every day. And our message is we're customers. We have places we need to go, and we need to pay transit providers to get us there. I tell transit providers all the time, I should look like nothing but good business to you. And so that's our message, and that's what we have to try to get across to them. And then we have to be willing to be a proactive part of that process to find solutions to our own transportation needs in conjunction with the rest of the community. And it takes a hard look at everything. It takes a hard look at how transportation is being provided, how it's being funded, how it's being used. And how it's being used involves what we're doing with it. So we have to look at ourselves as well in terms of have we made sure that we have the skills to use whatever's available? And, are we in fact doing, what is best to promote good transportation in our community. So it's a give and take from all of us to make it a process that's going to work in the future. So a lot going on at Project Action. Please look us up. Look up our ad in the Courier. Give us a call. Our services are all free, and we're there to serve both sides of this issue. So please get in touch with us. Thank you much.
And you can stay down front for a little bit of questions during the break.
Sure. Okay. Thank you, Donna. We're going to Melanie in just a moment to hear about major legislation in this area. Just a couple of announcements first. If at the break, Jeff Tom would come down front to meet the lady with a question about the plaque and figure out whether that's a resolutions question or some other kind of question, that would be helpful. Also, we are about 15 minutes away from break. Before we break, there will be some door prizes. When we return, there will be some door prizes, provided you're here. Always a condition. And in the meantime, we have exciting news from our very capable and much appreciated Director of Governmental and Advocacy Services, Melanie Brunson. Melanie? Oh, okay.
Thank you. There it is. I discovered the other day that I'm supposed to provide audio description of the machinations that are required in getting from one end of the table to the other and getting the guide dog to sit. That is what's happening here. I'm a little bit intimidated, however, by Steve's introduction, because he said I was going to give you exciting news about legislation. I don't know how to do that. Those are kind of mutually exclusive. However, exciting they may not be, but I hope they will be of interest to you, and I think that because of the nature of the subject matter, they will be, because transportation is central to what we do as individuals and as an organization, and I think it's fair to say that when I survey the subject of the calls that I get in the office, it is the most talked about topic on our phone lines in one form or another. And we do have legislation in both houses of Congress that is dealing with transportation issues this year, along with everything else. So we have an opportunity to influence what goes into that legislation and how it is implemented both on a national level and then in our states, in our communities, and in our neighborhoods, and ultimately by us as individuals. So I hope we can we can talk about it for a couple of minutes here this morning before the break. I know you're all anxious to have door prizes and a break. But we're going to talk about it in much greater detail on Saturday morning at the legislative seminar. So I'd encourage you to come then. And if you can't possibly come, that you get a tape. Because this is vital legislation. As has been alluded to earlier, most of you who have been around ACB for some time have been aware of a little catchphrase called T21. And that was always used in reference to transportation legislation. My predecessor, Julie Carroll, was very involved in the negotiations of what went into the T21 Transportation Equity Act for the 21st century back during the last round. Well, it is that legislation that is up for reconsideration and reauthorization by Congress. The situation that we have to work with, the good news is that we have some time to do that. We have some time to influence them. We don't have a lot of time, so we need to get organized and get moving. We have meetings scheduled for discussing these issues just about as soon as I get back from convention with members of both the House and the Senate. The Senate is a little further along in their process than the House is. And in a way, that's a good thing, because the Senate has a lot of different committees who all have a piece of it. They have a draft bill, which doesn't have a number yet, because it is just a draft bill, and I just got a copy of it before I left. It essentially is the bill that provides funding for everything from highway construction on interstate highways to construction of sidewalks, to where we use for audible signals. It also covers things like mass transit, and so it covers a wide range. It's called surface transportation as opposed to air transportation. So anything involving transportation on the ground or the surface is covered in this bill. So you can see it covers a wide range of issues. The Senate bill, from my cursory review, which I hope to have conducted more thoroughly by Saturday, if Jeff Tom will give me a little break from resolutions, is that it pretty much maintains the status quo in terms of funding for an authorization for programs. These bills not only provide the money, but they provide what's supposed to be done with it in terms of the kinds of programs it's to be used for and the kinds of research that is conducted by the entities, both private and public, that do transportation-related research of various kinds. This bill is currently in the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation, as well as a whole bunch of other committees, including Appropriations and Ways and Means. Ways and Means. Wait a minute. I didn't bring my notes up here. But there are about a half a dozen committees that are handling various aspects of the bill. It is called, the Senate bill in its draft form is the Safe Transportation Surface Transportation Safety Reauthorization Act. Surface Transportation Safety Reauthorization Act. In the House, we do not have a bill yet. We have a bill that has been introduced by the White House at the request of the White House, which is H.R. 2880. And it is the Safe Transportation Reauthorization Act, otherwise known as Safe Transportation 03, Safe T03. And it is another bill that basically maintains the status quo and does provide for some increases in research funding for additional types of research into things like intelligent transportation, which I believe constitutes the coin phrase that refers to things like what you heard about earlier from Clever Devices, also things like use of display screens that have messages on them for the sighted public and those kinds of things. ACB at this point, let me say that the House committee is working on their draft bill, and they've been real receptive to input from us. We will be drafting some language fairly quickly to present to them, containing the kinds of things that we are concerned with. And I'd like to just spend the last couple of seconds I've got to tell you what some of those things are. As was referred to earlier, we want to see research into what can be done to make quiet cars more detectable to us, so they're not quite so quiet. We want to make sure that there is more money available for the installation of accessible pedestrian signals. And we want to make sure that transit authorities, local public works agencies know that they can use the funds for the installation of accessible pedestrian signals. We want to make sure that there's encouragement for transit authorities to do two things at least. One, provide stop announcements, and two, put detectable warnings on the edges of all station platforms. We also want to make sure that there's more incentive to construct sidewalks and to ensure that sidewalks that do exist are accessible by way of being as free as possible of barriers that prevent people from getting down them and using them. We want to look into and figure out how to encourage transit authorities and other public transportation providers to deal in a fair manner with kiosks so that all of us can purchase our tickets independently and not just people who can see. So we are looking at how to incorporate this agenda into the transportation legislation that is coming up in both houses. And we are looking also at a lot of other issues, like this particular specific needs of people in rural areas. And I am very interested in input from you as individuals, and like I said, we'll be talking about it in greater detail on Friday. There are also some issues that I'd like to mention that we're working on that are transportation related because they involve the truck stops and rest stops along interstate highways that the federal government has jurisdiction over. The federal government can give states guidance as to what they do with those facilities. And there's a lot of controversy right now because since they're under federal authority, there's a priority for Randolph Shepherd vendors. And there are some provisions in the White House bill that allow for pilot projects that would, we believe, undermine that priority. And we've been assured by Congress that they're not going to put those provisions in there because there's bipartisan opposition to them because they would affect the business of private truck stop operators that are near interstate highways if McDonald's gets to put a McDonald's right in the rest stop. So we want to make sure that we also look at ways to not only protect the priority of our vendors, but strengthen their position in keeping their program alive and well and their access to federal highway projects. Federal highway facilities. So, as you can see, there's a lot going on, and we are going to need the help of anyone and everyone who's either willing to help us or whose arm we can twist. So you'll be hearing more from me, and I will be happy to stick around for a little while during the break and answer questions. Thank you. I'm sure my time's up. Perfect.
Is Cynthia Towers in the room? And if so, would she get to a mic, please? If Cynthia's here, she'll be doing some announcements when she's near a mic. And give us a few words. In the meantime, it's just about time to have door prizes. We thank you all for being here and for your steadfastness in still being here. 2 years ago, Chris said when he was elected that transportation would be a major focus of his efforts, and I think you can see that there's a good deal of work going on in that area and a lot of progress being made in the information we have, in our access to resources, in defining the issues, and in moving forward on addressing those issues in a positive way. So please join with me in congratulating our president and all those who worked on this issue.
Verizon, a proud supporter of ACB Radio.
Take one.
Hi, everybody. This is Phil Parr inviting you to come and join us for our new show called Blind Like Me. You know about those famous blind people like Ray Charles and Ronnie Millsap and Eric Weinmayer, Jim Snowbarger.
And his name get on the list.
I have absolutely no idea. Anyway, you've heard of those blind people, but there are a lot of blind people you've never heard of who do unusual things or have unusual skills. Well, we're going to try to talk to as many of those people as we can. We'll have a cooking show once a month with Dale Campbell. We'll have Don Shaw giving us some websites that are screen reader friendly, some websites that you can navigate. And we'll have input on the show from you. We'll have a special email address that you can send your correspondence to if you know somebody who would be good for the show, if you'd like to be on the show yourself. Well, email us. That'll start July 18th, immediately following The Blind Handyman, which is also moving to Friday night. So come and join us. We'd love to have you. Blind Like Me, starting July 18th over most of this ACB radio station.
Mm-hmm. The American Foundation for the Blind is proud to support ACB Radio. Visit AFB online at www.afb.org, home of the Braille Bug and the Helen Keller Archives.
ACB Radio.
Bringing you live coverage of the 42nd Convention of the American Council of the Blind. I'm Jonathan Mosen, and we apologize. We had a little bit of a meltdown there, and I guess that's half the fun of these live broadcasts, but we're back with you now. It is time for a break, and we are having that now. And let's just see if we can answer some questions. We did have some questions coming in about Donna Smith's presentation and wanting to know information about the website that she referred to in the 800 number, and I believe she said it's page 23 of the Keystone Courier, which is the newspaper I told you about earlier, and very kindly somebody has supplied me with a copy of that, and here we go. I'll read you what the article says that she referred to. People on the move. So how do I get there is the inevitable question we ask, whether making plans to go to work or school, taking care of personal business, or seeking entertainment. Easter Seals Project Action is a national project focusing on enhancing accessibility transportation options. We offer free publications, a technical assistance hotline, and subsidized training opportunities. Ask about our People on the Move training workshops. We work with communities interested in mobility planning to build partnerships with the transportation industry, disability community, and municipal planners to create solutions. To learn more about us, and here's the information that we've been asked for by a few people, call 800-659-6428. So that number again is 800-659-6428. Or you can visit the website at www.projectaction.org. So that's a nice, easy website to remember, www.projectaction.org, or that 800 number once again is 800-659-6428. 800-659-6428. My goodness, it is a thick Keystone Courier today. I'm holding it up to the microphone so you can see how thick it is. And we will have a look through that during the next session and tell you other items of note that might be in there when we come back to close at the end of the day. Just a reminder that if you are not able to hear all of the general sessions live, we are archiving them. They are running around the clock, and just as soon as I can get a small technical issue resolved, we should be making them available on demand pretty quickly as well. I'm just waiting for a Linux guru to help me out with a problem that that I'm having there, but we'll get there. It's now 21 to 11 Eastern Time. Let's take a look at some of the communications that we've received via MSN Messenger and email. And the address is convention@acbradio.org. That's convention@acbradio.org. And we always enjoy hearing from people telling us where you are, where you're listening from. And it's great to get people calling or emailing in from as far away as New Zealand. Oh, what a great place. And let's see, Kim Lebford has been in touch. Thank you for your email, Kim, and nice to know that you're listening. David Harvey. I guess it's holiday time where he is, so he's probably calling from Tomaranui in New Zealand. And Becky Butner as well. Becky asked us about the ACB history. People of Vision is the name of the book by Kim and Marjorie, sorry, by Jim and Marjorie McGiven. You can hear an interview about that on Blindline, the last show, the last Blindline that I ever did, which aired about a week ago. But to answer your question specifically, Becky, about where you can get the history, at the moment it's available in print and in an accessible ebook format. And if you would like to obtain it, there is a link to the ACB store on both the acb.org and acbradio.org websites. If you choose that link, there's a range of items that you can purchase, including a link to the purchase of People of Vision, A History of the American Council of the Blind. You can purchase the print, and I believe there's a limited offer, limited time offer at the moment, where you can also receive the ebook at no additional charge on CD. It's a PDF format, but it is accessible, and I think you'll find it a fascinating read. So that's where you can obtain it from at this point, from the ACB store, on either of the ACB websites. The book is being recorded, and it's also being made available in Braille in time, so you will be able to read it in those formats as well. And we're saying good morning to Ruthie Tipps, who's listening. She says she hasn't been to a convention since she attended ACB's convention in 1994. 1994 was Chicago. And she says she's really enjoying hearing some familiar voices and absorbing the atmosphere of the convention. So thank you for getting in touch. Also, Bonnie Lancet, nice to hear from you, Bonnie. Bonnie is in Delaware and listening. And we've had some reaction to some of the presentations on transportation, one of the issues that really plagues the blind community, and some fascinating perspectives on that this morning. Nick is in Long Island, and he says that they're doing pretty well there for public transportation. He says they have buses that talk their names, so that when the buses arrive, you can tell what bus it is. He also says that all of their train stations have detectable warnings, and that when you board the trains, you can hear announcements clearly on them. So let's take a look ahead to what you can expect in the next session, which is going to start very shortly. It's scheduled to start, in fact, in just a few minutes at 10:45. We'll begin with a presentation that is always popular, as we hear from one of the talking book narrators, as is done every year at convention. This year it is Gordon Gould, who's from New York City. What you often find with these narrator presentations is that they talk a little bit about how they got into the narrating game, what they enjoy about it, perhaps some amusing anecdotes, and sometimes they will even do a reading from one of their favorite books that they have read, and that has gone down particularly well with the reading audience. At 11:15, it's time to look at international issues, and the international guest that we'll hear from this morning is Enrique Perez. He's the president of the International Blind Sports Association, and he's from Madrid in Spain. Following that, we'll hear from Oral Miller with the Recreation Zone. There's lots of business to be done at the ACB convention, but it's also good to get the balance right. And so Ira will tell us about some recreation options here in the Burke, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where the forecast is for some showers and possible thunderstorms today, and a maximum of 82 degrees is predicted. After that, there'll be some announcements, and then we'll go into recess to come back at 8 o'clock Eastern Time tomorrow morning. That's 12 Universal Time. And a reminder that today's session will replay. The exhibits at the ACB convention will open once again in 15 minutes' time at 11 Eastern. That's 3 Universal Time. And at that point, our sister station, I love that, ACB Radio Interactive. It's interesting that they've always been called sister stations, isn't it? Wonder how these things happen. Yeah, why it's not a brother station. But anyway, ACB Radio Interactive will be on, broadcasting live from the exhibits and chatting with people. If you're in the Pittsburgh area or even slightly further afield and can get to Pittsburgh, it is worth coming to see all of the technology on display. Just looking at some of the people who are in Pittsburgh and some of the organizations who are in Pittsburgh exhibiting, there are familiar faces and some new people as well. The Bank of America is here with some accessible ATM machines that actually work. So if you found something that you want to purchase in the exhibits, you can go to the Bank of America machine. They'll give you some earphones. You can connect to the ATM and draw out the money. Freedom Scientific is here as well, with their PacMate range as well as Jaws for Windows. ACB Radio is in booth 9. Pierce College is an interesting organization offering degrees via the internet. You can take courses of study to get bachelor's degrees in a range of fields, as well as including paralegal issues and business. And I'm advised it's all accessible, and it's one way of obtaining a degree without perhaps some of the hassles involved in navigating all of those crowds and dealing with inaccessible materials. And they're having a focus group as well. Ethernet Computer Technologies are here as well, and Duxbury Systems once again with their award-winning Braille translation package. If you fancy taking some entertainment home with you, then descriptive video services are here, and narrative television as well. So a couple of places from which you can obtain described movies. Crisscross Technologies, who produce tutorials, can also be found at the exhibit hall, and Independent Living Aids as well. Bookshare.org, the service that is offering people in the United States a way to share books that they scan with other blind people. They're here. Aurora Ministries can be found in the exhibit hall as well. Innovative Rehabilitation Technology Incorporated, IRTI, of course. They've had a great history and they've always got some great gadget that you just have to have. Enabling Technologies, they're producing printers and a range of other things. National Industries for the Blind, you will have heard from Jim Gibbons last night as the keynote speaker, and some of the programs that they're working with in terms of encouraging blind people to work in management fields and setting up their own businesses. The American Printing House for the Blind do a wide range of things, including some pretty innovative software and hardware, as well as what you would call their traditional, I suppose, business as well. GW Micro are proudly displaying WindowEyes version 4.5, and they have a little bit of training outside of the exhibit hall as well, and they're demonstrating some of the features, such as the way that WindowEyes is working with Citrix and remote terminal services. The University of Pittsburgh Department of Rehab Science is here as well, I guess encouraging people to look at that as a course of study. And Envision America Incorporated are in booth 29. For those of you who use large print in conjunction with a computer, AI Squared are in the exhibit hall, and they are demonstrating their latest version of Zoom Text. Let's return to the convention coverage now.
We're going to do a couple of door prizes. Are the door prize folks ready?
We're ready if you're ready.
Okay.
We can get this microphone on.
I'm going to give you just another couple minutes. Let's come to order.
The microphone is not on.
It is on.
Okay.
Hold on, Gene. Let's come to order. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the first time that I've had the opportunity to address you. My name is Cynthia Towers, and I am your convention coordinator for this year's convention. I will be addressing you from time to time with announcements and other tidbits of interest. And I'm going to start that, then we'll go into door prizes, then I will return the lectern to Mr. Spiker, and he will continue with the morning program. First of all, you people are getting busy out there. We got some caucuses. You know what? I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit, and the convention committee's horn. What do you think about this setup? This is the first time in our 42-year history that we have been able to do classroom style, and I see that you're all taking advantage of that by having your... Oh, isn't that nice? I have to tell you that the space that you're in is 34,000 square feet. Just so you know. We hope to do this again in Birmingham and beyond, so look for that at future conventions. Okay, you've been a little bit busy with your caucuses already. Let me explain to you where caucuses are going to be. Outside of 310, there are escalators that are going up. Once you go up those escalators, continue going forward, and on your right will be 408 to 415. Caucus in room 409. It's going to make it very nice for the candidates. They'll really like this. Please try to have your caucuses in 408 to 415 minus 411, or in here in your delegation. It will really help our candidates so they don't have to run over to the Westin. Also, too, Wednesday at noon, Nebraska will caucus in 408. If you would like to set up a caucus, please go to the information desk. Ski for Light will have a reception Tuesday at 5 in the Executive Director's Suite. That is room 806 in the Westin. Ladies and gentlemen, we're running into an interesting dilemma. At the information desk, you're coming and the questions that you're asking, 90% of the questions that you're asking, the answers, we're looking, seeking for answers, are in your program. Now, if we're going to go through the expense of printing them, brailing them, stuffing them, we need you to read them. Okay? Please read your program. You got a table now. Bring it with you. 90% of the questions you're asking about are in the program. Also, too, I'm going to digress for a minute. This morning, somebody said something to me very profound. This person said to me, you know, this organization is only as strong as its members and as the people who are willing to do work. I want to say a special thank you to somebody who got up and helped me at 6:30 this morning place the delegate signs. I'd like you to give a special thank you to Glenn McCulley from Washington State. Oh, about 2 minutes. All righty. Just a couple of other things. The police are going to be helping you to go to jail, to patrol out as you're getting across. There's some people getting mixed up with the construction. I've been asked about exits. Exits are behind. You can go forward or you can go backward. Exits, and before you go out the glass doors to either side are double doors, and you can go downstairs. So that's where exits are. Please, this is the first time we've had signs on tables. If they're starting to get loose, we just put it down with double-sided tape. Try to preserve them. They got to last the whole week. And the last announcement is Clever Devices is running a bus to the mall, and they're going to be on a continuous loop, but we will get the schedule. And with the chair's indulgence, let's do at least one door prize.
Okay, from the Badger Association of the Blind and Visually Impaired, a $50 donation.
Ooh, $50.
$50 up.
Deborah Versteeg, Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Are you here? She's here. All right, that was quick, so let's do another one.
$25 from, and I only got one.
$25.
From the Alaska Independent Blind.
From Alaska Independent.
And a travel mug.
And a travel mug.
Ron Hepler, Chesapeake, Virginia.
Are you here, Ron? Where is he working? Okay, well, let's do this, Gene. Let's put his name aside and draw again. We'll verify that.
Okay. You want the prize put aside, too? You want the
prize? No, just draw another name.
Okay, draw another name.
And get to the mic, please.
Sherry Hum, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Sherry, are you here?
Home. H-O-M-M-E.
Guess not. Draw again.
Billie Jean Keith, Islington, Virginia.
Are you there?
She's here.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Put that one aside, or there's two aside.
Uh-oh, someone moved the gavel actually onto the podium. To the officer of the day. Please don't call my wife right now. She's... It does not compare, obviously, but it is a work of art. Is Gordon Gould with us?
Yes.
Yes, he's here. Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, every year for the past number of years, the American Council of the Blind has been honored by the Attendance at our convention and the opportunity to speak with a noted and highly accomplished reader of the talking books so many of us enjoy so much. We are honored to have with us this year Gordon Gould, who will now address you.
Thank you very much, and good morning.
Good morning.
Usually what I do when I record, I go into a soundproof booth, which is sort of like a jail cell, and I spend the next 2 hours, or if I'm unlucky that day, 4 hours, talking to a microphone, reading to a microphone. And I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to be able to talk to live people. I thought what I'd remark about this morning is I was asked to talk about my experiences in recording talking books. Well, actually, when you get to the microphone, the experiences are rather dull. You just sit there and you read the book. What is difficult is what you do before you get to the microphone. In other words, your homework. Now, I understand there are about 4 or 5 centers in the country where talking books are recorded. And I work in the New York Center. The American Foundation for the Blind has 8 studio rooms, which are almost always in use. And I understand, however, that there are other studios in Louisville, in Denver, Washington, D.C. I understand, too, that in Denver, they have a team of researchers who look up pronunciations for the narrators. I think that's foul pool, actually, because in our shop, we are held responsible for our own pronunciations. As a result, we've all become so hipped on pronunciations that my wife has forbidden me to discuss pronouncing words in our home, even. And the only place I can talk about it is in the studios at Talking Book at the American Foundation in Manhattan. And so you can imagine with what pleasure I arrive each morning to find people with the same interest as I have, and who are equally mad about words. Now, as you are probably aware, the English language itself is a minefield, a disaster area when it comes to pronunciation. I mean, I come from Chicago, and for example, we have a street named after a prominent German poet and essayist, Goethe. Well, in Germany, it's pronounced Goethe, not in Chicago. It's pronounced Goethe Street. My father remembers a bus driver who was covering all the bases, and he said, Geethy, Goethe, Goethe. Well, he was one-third right. But on the other hand, we have not Mozart Street, as you might pronounce it in Salzburg, but Mozart. And I hate to tell you what we do to Kosciuszko. In fact, that name, it has weird pronunciations all over this country. But I mean, all over the country, in Illinois, well, put it this way, in Egypt, we have Cairo. In Illinois, the same spelling is pronounced Cairo. Yeah. In Spain, it's Madrid. In Missouri, it's New Madrid. In Peru, it's Lima. In Ohio, it's Lima. And it goes on like that. In fact, you often run into difficulties in neighboring states. In North Carolina, B-E-A-U-F-O-R-T is pronounced Beaufort. Next door in South Carolina, it's pronounced Beaufort. And it's not the same community, it's but it's spelled exactly the same way. But these are the problems you run into in English. And part of the fun is discussing these things before we go into the studios. Now, in New York, we like to think that the Library of Congress sends us the most difficult books. I think we're simply dislocating our shoulder, patting ourselves on our backs, but they do tend to be rather problematical. They have languages from all over the world, and fortunately, in New York, we have a stable of readers, if I can call it a stable, who do know quite a lot of languages. I see a lot of talking book users here, and Ed Blake, for example, speaks Finnish and Brazilian Portuguese. Now, those are wonderful talents, and we draw on them. Frank Coffey knows Hungarian, one of the most difficult languages in the world. So if we have Hungarian problems, we go to Frank. There are, of course, any number of consulates in New York. Washington has even more, I'm sure. But we don't really have to go to the consulates. We have our own United Nations right there in our studios. Terry Donnelly speaks Irish Gaelic. And if you've ever seen Irish Gaelic printed, they use the alphabet that everybody else uses, not everybody, but we use, but you'd never know it. I mean, when you see the tangle of letters that produces the simplest sounds in Irish Gaelic, you wouldn't believe it. But there is Terry, dear girl, to help us out when we need it. When it comes to Scottish Gaelic, that is a no man's land. Nobody can speak that. I remember I was doing a book about Bonnie Prince Charlie escaping from the Battle of Culloden, or after the Battle of Culloden, and he was going across the lochs and the mountains of Scotland. And do you believe that I could find two people who knew Scottish Gaelic who could agree on any pronunciation of any single loch or mountain? Not at all. Nobody could agree. So I simply had to toss a coin and make my own choices. And nobody complained. Well, Scottish is rather interesting. I remember being told about a St. Andrew's Society dinner in São Paulo, Brazil. And for this, they had imported haggises. And it was stopped at the border, or actually at the customs, because nobody knew what it was. And so they asked the St. Andrew's Society, what is a haggis? And they told them. They said, I don't know about that. It involves certain parts of sheep and that sort of thing that aren't terribly PC to talk about. And so they sent it off to their laboratory. And the report came back that the haggises were admitted as fertilizer. Well, that's one of the problems with Scottish, I think. But fortunately, we have also in our talking book studios a young woman monitor who grew up in Lebanon, and she is fluent in Arabic. And as you can imagine, a lot of Arabic books are books about Arabic subjects are coming in to be recorded. And she is being given a lot of work to advise us on how to pronounce Arabic. We have a number of other people who can do languages quite well. Suzanne Torren. She is a wonderful reader. She was the first one to win an Alexander Scorby Prize for good reading. And she speaks French fluently, beautifully. She also speaks Yiddish. And that's an interesting combination. We have Robert Blumenfeld, who is wonderful at accents. He also knows French extremely well. And he's written a book about accents to help actors who have to produce an accent, a foreign accent, in English. And he's virtually covered the world for accents. And he can do them himself. And he's, in fact, putting out a second edition of his book. And it's got 100 more pages in it. There's that much demand. And he's, in fact, just finishing up a second book on how to record books. And if anybody has experience in that, he does. But he's been very kind. He's asked us for our input. We've told him, and I don't think anything of what we said will appear in his book. But that's all right. We appreciate the interest. But there are all sorts of problems in recording books that you may not be aware of. In fact, most of us aren't aware of them until the Library of Congress sends them back to New York saying, this is rejected because you have one word wrong. Yes. So, well, actually, what mostly involves is correcting the word and sending it back to Washington, which is nice. But I remember doing the recording of what I think is one of the finest novels of the 20th century, Solzhenitsyn's The First Circle, which all takes place in Moscow. Well, as it happens, my son is fluent in Russian. He spent 10 years studying it. And so he helped me a lot in all the Russian names. And in fact, he even gave me a book of the stresses in Russian names. And that is extremely valuable. Of course, you have to be able to read Cyrillic that Russian is written in. But in order to use this book, I learned Cyrillic, which isn't that difficult. But in recording The First Circle, I had additional help. I had his Russian teacher and her husband, who in fact is from Moscow. He is Russian. And as a monitor, I suppose you know that when we record, we also have somebody outside the booth who runs the machinery and who also has the book in front of him or her and stops us if we make a mistake. And my monitor for this novel was a man who unfortunately has since died. He was a soldier in Vietnam and came back with God knows what awful diseases, one of which finally killed him. And his parents were Russian. They were from St. Petersburg. And, of course, he learned Russian from them. And the St. Petersburg Russians believe that they speak the most beautiful, purest Russian of anybody in the country. And they're probably right. But this novel takes place in Moscow. So I was always having battles with Nikolai about the pronunciation of the names. And I would secretly go off to my Moscow informant, the husband of my son's teacher, to get the Moscow pronunciation of words that I got from the St. Petersburg people. At any rate, after 600 pages of this, the book went off to the Library of Congress, and they sent it back. I have mispronounced one word. And I couldn't believe it. I'd been so careful. The word was an English word, as it turned out. It was babushka. Well, in Russian, babushka, or it's babushka. Babushka is a grandmother. And I thought, oh, that's why the scarf is called a babushka, which is how I pronounced it. But it isn't. And Russian has a totally different word for the headscarf. And this word was not Russian, but English. So I corrected it and went back to the library. But I've never forgotten it. And I'll have to tell you that I've just finished a book this last week, which I will not recommend to you. Not every book we get is worth recording. And you've had that experience too. And, at any rate, this had the word spelled chitterlings. And I pronounced it chitterlings. Well, it's pronounced chitlins, as it is in every single dictionary. I'd never come across it. In 33 years at Talking Book, I had never come across the word chitlins. I'd heard it, you know, but I thought that was just a way of saying it. It's dialect. Well, it isn't. It's no more dialect than, say, bosun is for boatswain, or victuals is for victuals. Victuals is correct. Bosun is correct. Oh, so many sailing terms are correct. And if you do a novel that takes place on the high seas, you better have them, because there are a lot of sailors in this world who will be quite affronted if you talk about a mainmast when it turns out to be a mainmast. Think little things like that that come up to confront you and give you nightmares. One of the problems has been, and Patrick Horgan was the one who had to face it, Robert Louis Stevenson. When you have the whole name, you don't know whether the middle name is Louis or Louis. Well, as a matter of fact, it turns out it's neither. It's spelled Louis, L-O-U-I-S, but it's pronounced Louis, not Louis, because his name was originally spelled L-E-W-I-S, and it was pronounced Louis. So it's Robert Louis Stevenson, and he was doing a very long biography of him that went to several volumes, so he had to know. And Patrick was a man who never gives up on his research. And I'm just passing that along to you, not because you're going to be able to use it in polite conversation, but because it's one of those things that the word mavens, the word mafia, in Talking Book Studios delight in. I can tell you that one of the great books of reference, which unfortunately is totally out of print now, was put out by the BBC in England. And it's a pronouncing dictionary of English names and places. And it's absolutely invaluable. And I can't imagine why the BBC let it lapse. But it gives you all of the things you need to know. Like, for example, there's a name, Featherstone Haw. It's pronounced Fanshawe. Or it can be pronounced Festenhaw. Or Fessenhay. Or Firstenhaw. And the list goes on. There's another place in England, Belvoir. And we have a Belvoir here. It's pronounced Belver. Here, there it's pronounced beaver. You'd never guess without the BBC dictionary. And it's amazing how few dictionaries these days, except the big complete English dictionaries, are pronouncing. It's as if the editors don't want to take a chance they don't want to stand behind pronunciations. Of course, pronunciations are a movable feast. I'll have to admit that. Something like harass, which is what is usually said now, correctly said, it's harass. But nobody says that anymore, except the dictionaries and people who are recording books of 19th century English, in which case you have to say harass because they didn't think of harass in those days. But yeah, yeah. He said that's one word, not two. At any rate, if you come upon Latin in any book, which you're doing quite constantly, it seems, there are all sorts of Latins. There is school Latin that we learned in school here. There is where you have weenie weedy weeky, or weenie weedy weeky. Then you have church Latin, which sounds like Italian. Then you have legal Latin, which doesn't sound like anything. And it goes on from there. You have botanical Latin. I remember I once recorded Thoreau's book called The Maine Woods, which has 30 pages at the back of simply lists of flora and fauna from the Maine Woods with their English and their Latin names. So I found a very helpful man at the American Museum of Natural History in New York. He spent an entire afternoon with me giving me the correct Latin names of every single entry in those 30 pages. He was amazing. But he finally admitted to me that nobody really has a standard pronunciation of Latin names for whatever they are. Even the man who thought up the Latin names, Linnaeus, comes a cropper in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where the street named after him is pronounced Linnaeus.
7 to 8.
So there you are.
7 to 8 minutes.
Okay, thank you. At any rate, the problems with Latin go on and on. I won't bore you with that. I remember one of my books, I don't recommend this one either, it wasn't that bad, called The Wyvern. A wyvern, I didn't know what a wyvern was, but it's in the dictionary, means a banner that you can fly from a ship. And this was about a young man, the hero was a young man, who was born in Borneo of a Bornean mother and a Dutch sailor. Well, the mother's name took up half a line of type. And I had no idea how to pronounce it. I had no idea how to pronounce the other Bornean names of her friends and relations, which took up the first third of the book. So I called him up. He lived in Hawaii. And I said, I enjoyed your book very much. That was a lie. I enjoyed your book very much. But I wonder if you could help me pronounce some of the names, like the name of the protagonist's mother. And he said, you know, I don't know. And I said, well, didn't you have something in mind when you wrote out that long word? He said, no, I was simply concerned with having it look nice on the page. And he said, you can pronounce them any way you want. Unfortunately, he did the same thing with half the place names, which the protagonist's boat, when he got one, kept putting into shore to. Half of them were real and in gazetteers, and we have some huge gazetteers in the Talking Book Studios to consult, but half of them were made up by the author. You had to look up absolutely every single place name to find out which were real and which were made up. And the made up ones, you could have your choice of pronunciations. You could do it whichever way you want. Now, if you think that talking about words like this is a way that an intelligent man should spend his day, that's what I think. But my wife thinks I'm absolutely mad, and she won't let me discuss it. Now, here I've been discussing it for the past 20 minutes, and you've been very patient with me. and I thank you very much. Yeah.
If you're at all like me, you have certain readers of talking books where when you hear that that person is the reader, the content of the book really doesn't matter so much. And for me, Gordon Gould is certainly on that list. So, Gordon, keep on making them up, and we'll keep on listening. I'm a little mad about words myself, and I would happily have given him another 30 minutes or an hour had he wanted it. But one of the afflictions of officers of the day is the attempt to exercise discipline over the clock in the interest of the complicated schedules we all have at convention. I'd like, therefore, to move on here. The rest of our morning, we have our international guest, who will momentarily be introduced by Oral Miller. We then have Oral's account of things we all need to know about the recreation zone, and I hope I didn't miss the yoga session yet. Still got time, he says. Still got time. We need to start meditating about that, though, I imagine, to get ready. We have a few announcements which have been given me here at the top, and I ask you, in deference to the people who want you to know these things, not to leave until they're done. We will then have a few door prizes, and if you need to leave before that, please do so with respect to those who need to hear whether their names have been called. Thank you very much for your attention, and I now give you our good friend Oral Miller.
Thank you very much, Steve. Our featured international speaker is indeed a very knowledgeable and interesting person dealing with many different areas. As for his background, while a sighted young person, he was educated in the mainstream education system in Spain into his college years. Upon losing some of his sight at that point, he changed direction for a while and entered training as a piano tuner and technician, after which he taught in that field for a number of years. And it's my understanding that one of the reasons he studied in England during that period was in an effort to upgrade the program in Spain, sponsored by the prestigious Spanish National Organization of the Blind, ONCE, O-N-C-E. So when you see that, it's not once. While working in this field, he became more and more involved in the programs administered by ONCE and became, in the progression of things, elected to and selected to more and more responsible positions, such as serving as the Secretary General of the very prestigious and very well-resourced ONCE Foundation. That's another way of saying it was responsible for considerable funds. And also has served more and more responsible positions in connection with, for example, the executive committee, serving as an executive committee member of the European Blind Union. He is now the International Affairs Advisor of the General Council of ONCE, and his volunteer position is that of President of the International Blind Sports Association from Madrid, Spain. My pleasure to introduce to you Señor Enrique Perez.
Enrique. Okay, thank you very much, Oral. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Buenos días a todos. Well, it is a pleasure, a privilege to be here today, here before this extremely friendly auditorium with all these enthusiastic colleagues from the United States. Even though I come from Madrid, I have just learned also to say Madrid, I feel here at home in the U.S. because this is like my second home. I have family living here. My sister lives here in the state of Utah. So my warmest greetings to the state of Utah, if he's here also. I just have, I think, 25 minutes, so I'll try to be brief and describe my experience, the relations, international relations field that might be also interesting for you. I will start by describing what is the ONCE, what Oral just said, is the organization I belong to. I grew in the ONCE. I was born in ONCE in a way because my father is also blind and he worked for many years. I got the education, employment, part of the visual rehabilitation, and also was given the opportunity to study abroad, to learn English, and to become what I am today. I will start by saying that the ONCE is a public law corporation, an association with social goals, which was founded 64 years ago in Spain to foster and channel social services and all kind of services for the blind, particularly job creation schemes for the blind and visually impaired. To this end, at the outset, the state administration granted the organization the concession to sell its popular coupon, which is a lottery, which has been and still is the principal source of income that enables the ONCE to fulfill its task, and also achieving the full integration of the blind and partially sighted people in the country. At ONCE now we have a membership of nearly 64,000 blind people out of a population of 40 million in the country. The General Council of ONCE is the governing body, has been run along democratic lines in the organization for over two decades. Now, and also in the past, well, the blind members elect those who will represent them for the next 4 years term. And the institution is home to different internal political groups or currents of opinion that present their respective candidates. The central governing, as I said, is the General Council, which is based in Madrid. And in addition, the ONCE has a fully decentralized administrative structure in each of Spain's autonomous communities through its territorial councils, which are also elected democratically every 4 years. The lottery, the coupon, what we call, is a traditional lottery, and it's a concession that was granted to the ONCE so that it could finance its drive to cover the needs of all the blind and partially sighted citizens in the country. Nearly today, 23,000 people who are either blind or have other disabilities sell this lottery, which is now the principal source of employment for the blind in Spain. The coupon also finances the foundation ONCE and its programs aimed at seeking employment and the eliminating of barriers for people with disabilities other than blindness. From the revenue obtained by the sales of this lottery, half goes to on prizes money. 25% is earmarked for operating costs, and the rest is devoted to social services for the blind and through the Foundation ONCE expressing solidarity with other disabled groups. I would say that the low cost, the diversity of its offer, and the generous amount of its prizes makes it an extremely attractive product. We believe that with this source of income, the best way to serving and to making integration possible is by finding work for all blind people, thus providing them with economic independence, facilitating access to culture and information, which are those essential elements for their personal and social development, I'm providing them with laser possibilities as well as a special assistance for those situations that are also special. Employment, of course, as I said, is the key of our organization, and the principal source of employment comes from selling the Ontes lottery. But there are many blind people who exercise other professions both within the ONCE and in business outside the institution, such as lawyers, economists, teachers, physiotherapists, journalists, psychologists, information system specialists, telephonists, etc. Also piano tuners. Why not? Even though now it's not a profession with too many possibilities. In any case, this is an uphill struggle, and as we still have to convince many businessmen of the tremendous capabilities of these blind professionals. This goal applies also to all the other disabled groups. The Spanish National Organization of the Blind also has committed itself to creating from last year to the year 2008 20,000 new jobs for disabled citizens in Spain. But to be able to achieve also these goals of integration and labor integration particularly, we believe that education is the basis of everything. Thinking of the future, the education of our blind and visually impaired children is, as I said, that cornerstone of the ONCE social planning. Today we have over 8,000 children and youngsters now receiving educational attention from the ONCE, either directly if they study in the institution's own centers. We have five educational resource centers in the country, or with the support of educational attention teams if they are integrated in mainstream education. Support is extended to university and vocational training studies. The ONCE provides blind students with the textbooks they require in either braille, audio, or electronic format, and undertakes the adaptation of their place of study. Also, the organization has a physiotherapy university college attached to the Autonomous University of Madrid. This is a highly suitable profession for blind persons also, and provides in Spain significant source of employment. But there are many other services, of course, as most of the organization provide. Basic rehabilitation, mobility and guide dog. We have a specific center which was created 5 years ago for training guide dogs. I felt myself amazed when I found here the popularity of the guide dogs. We are starting on that field. Here is, as I see, very happy. It's very common to see and to move around with guide dogs, which is something we also want to, it's an example we want to follow in our country. There are different services, as I said. Of course, technology. Technology is for everyone also the keystone of that integration. Among other initiatives, we run the Center for Research, Development and Tiflotechnical Application, the CIDA team. And we are, of course, very much interested in exchanging contacts and relations with all the blind organizations in the world, because technology goes so fast that if we are not coordinated, if we don't use this kind of forums, and of course international forums, to exchange those ideas, to put in common information, it would be difficult to be able to get into that high-speed train, as technology is. Technology is for everyone, but particularly for the blind, because it requires to be adapted. So we have to be more cautious of what's going on and be more aware, because we need extra time, as you all know, to adapt those new technologies quickly changing. So I move on to the International Affairs Department, where I work in my organization, and I serve as advisor of the General Council. As I said, is the governing body of the organization. Within that department, External Relations, International Affairs Department, we have always been active in those fields we consider extremely interesting for the blind, not only for our country or for our people, but also for all the blind people in the world, to give our best, to cooperate, and to be as active as possible in the international field. There are two important organizations I've been working with and I am serving now. One is IBSA, International Blind Sports Association. I have the privilege to chair in this moment together with our friend Oral Miller, who is the vice president. And also working very close to the World Blind Union, the organization, umbrella of all the organization of the blind in the world, representing today more than 150 countries. I will start by IBSA, describing what is IBSA. IBSA is the International Blind Sports Association, as I said, was founded in Paris in 1981 as a non-profit making organization and is declared as a public utility organization. Is fully integrated within the International Paralympic Committee and recognized by the IOC, International Olympic Committee, and is the maximum governing organization to represent sports for the blind in the world. We are present in the five continents. We already have more than 110 countries. And this is the second largest organization in the world after the World Blind Union in number of countries represented. IBSA feels it is essential that its movement should have its own identity and boost the practice of sports, specifically by blind and visually impaired persons. The Executive Committee of IBSA, which is the body that governs between General Assemblies, grants also priority to all those countries where blind sports have not been developed or where they have not reached an adequate level. And we also, our purpose is to foster the friendship among blind athletes, to motivate and get as many blind people as possible involved in sporting activities on a regular basis, to promote and disseminate the ideas underlying both competition and recreational sport for the blind, to defend the Olympic ideal and act in accordance with those principles. Also to promote the aims and ideas of IBSA schools for the blind and among blind youngsters in general, to promote and coordinate international events and activities with a view of stimulating greater development of sporting programs, and the key of our of organization, of course, is that leading and unique organization to represent worldwide sports is to establish universally accepted rules for blind sports and register those records of the sports. We have already 14 recognized sports. Many of them are very popular, specifically for the blind, as goalball, torball, showdown. There are many of you that, of course, have attended or know people who attended Paralympic Games with those Paralympic, already Paralympic sports for the blind, so athletics, swimming, judo, etc. We are trying to also foster new sports. There are many that are already official within IBSA, very popular as 9-pin bowling, 10-pin bowling, but there are new sports that we consider appropriate to be introduced in our program, such as rowing, equestrian, beat baseball, that are widely practiced in this country, but they are not that common in other continents. And we also have specific plans to develop, to provide as many opportunities for the blind to have access to different sports. And those sports have to be practiced on a regular basis, so at the end we are able to have national competitions, continental competitions, international world competitions, and eventually Paralympic competitions. The International Blind Sports Federation, if you want more information that I can give you today, just short speech, is available at our new website. We have just launched a new website a few months ago. It's www.ibsa.es. So www.ibsa.es. You can find there what we are doing, and if you are interested in getting more in contact with Sport for the Blind, our national organization member in the U.S. is, of course, as you know, USABA, United States Association of Blind Athletes, whose president is also here with me. It's our friend Oral. And you can get access to that information. Or afterwards, I don't know if we have the chance to answer questions and so on. Moving on within the international field. Also at IBSA, we are making good progress on the relations with the World Blind Union. The World Blind Union, as you know, represents more than 150 countries. And among many other important responsibilities is seeking ways to improve the status of the blind worldwide, with the diversity, with the huge diversity of situation, countries, cultures, legal context, and so on. As part of that role in what is the integration and facilitating opportunities to the blind, we consider that sports is a very good tool to get to that. As I had the chance also to tell you, to express yesterday in one of the panels I attended, sports every time more and more is probably the field in which society, the media, the government have more attention to, because it attracts the citizens in every country. It doesn't matter what it is. So getting into sports is helping very much to be better known as blind people and to show the world that we are capable of everything. That is part of our slogan. So we are being close to the World Blind Union in that regard. The World Blind Union also is interested in the promotion, of course, of the blind, because it's so close, sports, to education, to culture, and to integration in a way. We have just signed an agreement with the World Blind Union, and in that agreement we express the need to encourage those countries that are not already members of IBSA to join our federation, our association IBSA, and also within the World Blind Union we are going to help to promote the among the educators in colleges, schools, within the government, how important for a child, for a blind child particularly, to be involved within sports and physical education in the period of a scholarship.
About 2 or 3 minutes and then
okay.
A few questions.
Okay, just 2 or 3 minutes to go. So within the World Blind Union, as I said, through this specific agreement, we are opening our relations, and we will be able to tell you in the future what the progress is. And also together with the ICEVI, ISEVI, which stands for International Council of the Education of the Visually Impaired. As you may already know, this is the organization that represents the education for the blind, which is also a consultative body of the United Nations in the field of the education for the blind. Well, three of us are now working together, trying to develop a world plan to improve the level of participation in sports of children and blind people in general, and to make all together with our possibilities, which are of course very limited. But I guess in the coming years we will be able to tell what is the outcome of this, the result of this progress. And I can assure you that we at IBSA are really enthusiastic in this new dimension of work at three levels, And we will be able, hopefully, if I come here in the coming years, to tell you what the progress is. And of course, I will be very happy to invite all of you to be as active as you can within your organization of the blind to participate in this goal, in this tremendous initiative that we consider will be very good for the future. We will be able to have children in the future as much integrated, as enjoying as much their physical and psychological opportunities in the world. So that's all what I can tell you today. Thank you very much for your attention. I will be here today. Thank you.
We have received a question from you by email.
Oh, yes. An announcement first, and then we have received a question from Mr. Perez via email, and Jonathan will organize that for us in just a moment. I do want to tell you that Mr. Perez will not be able to be with us at the International Forum tomorrow night, unfortunately, having been called back to Spain. Excuse me. I think we'll all have fun talking a lot in air conditioning this week. However, he will be at the speaker's reception tonight, and once again, that will be in room 2322. And so we invite all of you to come there and to visit with him and all the rest of our speakers from this morning. Now, Jonathan, if you have a mic, I understand we have a question via email.
I do. I have a mic in front of me and a mic on my right. One's a human one. My question, it's actually from Rebecca Cragness, who's listening in, and she asks, does Spain have the kind of tension between blind groups and disabled groups as in our country?
In Spain, is there tension or disagreement between groups of blind people and groups of other disabilities?
Yeah, okay. I didn't get one of the words. I didn't want to get out of the key of the question. Well, it's not. It's not. That's a very good question, and I like that question because it's very important in my experience, of course, to make aware of the utility and importance of the unity of the blind, not only at world level, at continental level, but in the nation. In Spain, when we were founded as organization in 1938, right after the Spanish Civil War, that was a result of a decree that came from, at that time, the leader of the country, which was a dictator, was Sir Franco, and there was different organizations of the blind, one in the south, in this area of Andalusia, based in Seville, another one in Catalonia, in Barcelona, another one in the center, in Madrid, and so on. And out of that, we got the unity of all the blind in one only organization that later on got the democracy when Spain got into democracy in 1978. We started also that process of democracy. But it was useful in a way, and we have respect to that decision because even though it was forced, was not natural, of course, the result, the outcome of it was that every single resource and every single possibility for the blind is under one only plan, under one only program that is easier to take advantage of the diversity of possibilities that you may find. So that being said, when you look back upon history in a retrospective way, you see how much we have improved through the unity of organizations and having only just one representing all the groups and of blind people. Now we are having, of course, as every organization, I guess, good and bad relations with the government of the country, depending on certain policies that they are introducing within the law. And it's much easier for us to have one only and unique voice, always unanimous, representing the blind, than it is having diverse voices coming from different ways. That's
sir, I think the experience. Other part of the question had to do with whether, what about the blind people and other disabilities?
All right. Well, with regard to other disabilities, there are different groups, but what we have is what is called the the Disability Council, National Disability Council, where it seats all the different groups. Now in Spain, that Disability Council is led by the blind because of the strength of the organization of the blind. When we got the foundation, we started also supporting and helping other disabilities through specific programs of employment and so on. So what we have is different groups. They are not all together, of course. ONCE also, only represents the blind, but is sitting in that council, chairing it now, and making projects together. Of course, projects of common interest, but always taking separate decision and programs when it is representing the blind itself. So the question in that regard is, we are separate in terms of organizations, but we have a full coordination in terms of being under one umbrella, representing all when it comes to general disability policies.
Let us all join in welcoming and thanking Mr. Perez for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
This certainly enriches our experience at the convention and in ACB to know of other efforts happening around the world internationally, and to be able to have a chance to talk with the people who are being so effective in these various efforts. Oral, you now have something to tell us on a somewhat related topic, I believe, questions of recreation.
Yes. My remarks will be fairly brief. All right, class, as we switch to our Jeopardy mode, who can tell me what word I am defining? A mystic and ascetic discipline by which one seeks to achieve liberation of the self and union with the Supreme Spirit or Universal Source. And it continues and ends with, and prescribed procedures, controlled breathing, etc. Yoga is correct. And I say that because you are familiar with the program that we have introduced in recent years, the recreation zone. That's the opportunity to try something different, to relax, stretch, do whatever. At the end of a day, dealing with resolutions, important presentations, demonstrations, etc. This year, at 4 p.m. each day, will be the recreation zone time. On Monday and Tuesday, it will be in 413 here in this convention center. The activity this afternoon is yoga. And you are advised to wear casual clothing. Be as casual as you wish, and you probably will spend at least part of your time sitting or lying on the floor, as some of those moves and procedures that are included in yoga. This is indeed an opportunity to try this out, so if you're least bit interested, certainly come by and give it a try. Tomorrow the activity will be audible darts. Pittsburgh is a pocket of great interest and expertise in this field, and that is going to be the site for that.
It's a great sport for an election year.
Steve says it's a great sport for an election year. And an extremely popular activity in recent years, increasingly popular, in fact, will be Wednesday and Thursday, and that is water aerobics. And that will be at the Weston Pool. That's going to be under the capable direction of our own Geraldine Coors, with very capable assistance from husband Don, who patrols the edge of the pool to make sure that the youngsters and others don't get close enough to interfere too much. And Jerry is aware that the Weston Pool is a different kind of pool. It's a lap pool. It's not the traditional hotel swimming pool. It's sort of long and narrow by comparison. It's not as deep as some of the others, But she has assured us that the activities will be modified to make sure everyone gets maximum benefit from these activities. So, what I would say is, by all means, enjoy these activities and let us know what your reaction is. And as they would say in some parts of the country this afternoon, y'all come. Okay, thank you very much.
If Cynthia is not in the hall, would someone with the radio give her a call? We are a couple minutes ahead of schedule, and she did have some other things to tell us. In the meantime, I have a few announcements here. From Kathy Skivers, the indomitable, the indefatigable, and ever-inspiring Kathy Skivers, we have the following announcements. Kathy's in 1215 in the Westin. Well, I don't know about the present tense, but you can find her there, 1215 in the Westin. She says, for those with tickets for the DKM, we know that had to do with the Mad Hatter's party. If you have tickets to turn in, or if she says you have not had the good fortune to have sold tickets that you have to turn in, please come by so she can give you tickets so you can have the good fortune to sell some and then turn them in. So either way, you can get in touch with Kathy in 1215. At that same location in 1215 Weston, you can buy tickets for the ACB government employees, and she says they have great prizes. Now, here is a on a somewhat more serious note. The nominations committee will meet in the Cambria, or is it Cambria? Where is my gazetteer? I look for one under the podium and find only a gavel, which may not be the tool of choice for this particular job. Anyway, in that room, the pre-Cambrian lobby they should have somewhere, I think, too. But in the Cambria room will be the nominating committee, and this note says, we will meet promptly, and in front of the promptly is a .46 in Braille. Your next question for a 5-point toss-up on the GE Braille Bowl is, what does the 4-6 mean? Promptly at 5:30. For those of you who have not participated in the nominating committee previously, be advised that promptly means the door closes and thou shalt not enter, nor neither shalt thou exit. Until that meeting is concluded, which usually runs, what folks, I haven't been there that often.
It all depends.
Yes, it runs exactly that long.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Kathy.
This is that Kathy Skivers person. I have been notified by an affiliate that there is a change in their representative who will be coming, and I have referred them to the Credentials Committee. I'm not quite certain what to do. But I don't care which of your people you're going to send from the state, but clear that all up, because I would hate to see both delegates arrive and have to decide which one is which. In any case, it's Maryland that's asking for a change in representation, and I'll be waiting at the door to see who you send me.
Mr. Chairman, one quick announcement. One of the volunteers just came to me, and I'm doing this from here. And if she's not in here, then we'll take this to the information desk. I have a pocketbook here with probably quite a bit of money in it. It's a change purse, and it was left under a chair in this room. Our volunteer has found it, and before she takes it to the information desk where it will be, I wanted to make sure that this person was not in the room. It's a pink one with a black stripe on it. And that's all I'm going to tell you.
Secret forensic evidence has been withheld.
It's going to go to the information desk.
Mr. Chair?
I believe I heard a lady call for the floor.
This is Ms. Towers. I am a lady.
Yes?
This is a lady.
I have some announcements when you are ready.
All right. Well, I did hear a lady call for the floor. Well, that's good. One other thing, Cynthia, and then you're on.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Jay, where would you like her to come?
Jay, where do you want her to come?
She can go to the information desk because that's where it's going.
All right. We hope for a happy reunion. Okay, this announcement is, I understand there's limited time to take advantage of this, so here it is. For free training using JAWS with AOL, call Weston Room 1809. Training is being provided by the Carroll Center for the Blind and AOL. Call 1809 for an appointment. And again, I do understand time is limited on that. Let's see. After Cynthia, we'll have a few door prizes, and I believe that will wrap it for this morning. Cynthia?
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Take us home, Cynthia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, resolutions are in Armstrong of the Westin Hotel. You can contact a committee member. It's in your program who the committee members are. Or you can go to the Armstrong room in the evening, and they need them by tomorrow at 10 p.m. Secondly, Utah has canceled its caucus. Thirdly, the speaker's reception today will be in 1422 of the Westin. Speaker's reception, 1422 at 6 p.m. Next, the convention ear would like to offer its sincere apologies for some of the glitches that they've had. They had some Houston information still on there. And so they have been working diligently with trying to get the newspaper out, the ear up, and all of you informed. So the convention ear is up and running. What is that number?
6431.
They dial from the Westin. 6431. If you're in the Hilton, you dial 412-281-3700 and then ask. There's going to be a bus that goes to the mall. It's going to go Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. It's called the Waterworks Mall on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. The schedule we will publish we'll put on the convention ear, and we'll also publish it in the newspaper. It's also number 91A that leaves from 8th and Penn. And Marjorie Beeman tells me that a really good way to get to the airport is the 28X. It only costs you $2, goes right to the airport, and we'll get you some more information on that because y'all aren't going home yet. Just two more announcements. Bill Lewis is going to be the nominating committee representative for Ivy. And the final announcement that I have is ACB Radio is having a Dutch treat breakfast in the Orchard of Restaurant of the Westin tomorrow at 7 a.m. Mr. Chair, that concludes my announcements.
Thank you, Cynthia. Very helpful. Let's now do three door prizes and then proceed to the rest of our day. Thank you all for coming this morning. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Mr. Barton, please.
Okay. One stainless steel talking alarm watch.
William McDonald, Oil City, Pennsylvania.
Yes, is he here? I'm not hearing him yet. Not here. It's really something. You hear Jay say something from the front of the room in about 3 seconds. It comes back from the other end. It's great stuff up here.
I practiced in Switzerland.
Jerry Leary, Boulder, Colorado.
Not here.
Oral Miller, Washington, D.C.
I believe he might be here. He's up here on the podium.
Oral just told me not to yodel. I just thought I'd mention that.
Okay, a VHS video, The Miracle Worker from Sports Vision here in Pittsburgh, and a newsreel subscription to...
Russ Erler, San Antonio, Texas.
I'm not hearing that he's here.
Mary Hayes, Jacksonville, Florida.
Silence remains.
This could be a long drawn-out process.
Walter Sutton, Morristown, New Jersey.
Sam Master, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
No, Sam.
Abby Vincent, Culver City, California.
Is she here? She's here.
She's here. She's here.
Yay. One more.
One more.
This is a ten CD set from the Iowa Council of the Blind, and it's Natural Dreams Music for Relaxation. 10 CDs. This is a nice prize.
John Goldberg, Peterborough, England.
Ooh.
Nope.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
While he's drawing another name, if that gentleman isn't here, one correction to the last announcements. It's ACB Radio Amateurs, not ACB Radio. Someone thought they heard only ACB Radio, but it's ACB Radio Amateurs that will have the Dutch Treat breakfast at 7 a.m. tomorrow. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Chris Boone, Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania.
Just missed it. I believe she was here last night, as I recall.
Catherine Wasserman, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
All my Pittsburgh people are left.
I told those Pennsylvania people to stay in the room.
And now they know you're serious.
They don't never listen to me.
Francis Vitula, Hollywood, Florida.
Yes, she's here.
All right.
All right, that's our three post-session door prizes. Thank you all for coming. Please enjoy the rest of your day.
I don't think Frances is here.
No?
Oh, she is.
Yes.
Okay, never mind.
Where is she? There are folks who assert that she is.
That concludes this coverage of the general session of the American Council of the Blind's 42nd convention being held here at the Berg in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center. Let's just take a look at some correspondence that we've received. Pat Price, nice to know that you're still with us, Pat. And now it's very interesting that you raise this, because I was just talking about this with Jay and Mike before we went on the air. Pat asks about the availability of the Keystone Courier in electronic form. At the moment, I don't believe it is available, but I'll try and make some inquiries. I've been lobbying a BOP member about this. I'll see what I can find out for you, Pat. Thanks for the query. Also, George Baptiste from Louisiana. Now, George is coming to the convention today, but he's been listening to what's transpired so far on ACB Radio. So, George, nice to hear from you. Also, Melvin Smith, from Kansas City, Missouri. Nice to hear from you. Suela Milo, as well. And Derek Lane, who wishes he was here. We'll have to send him an e-postcard. Having a lovely time. Wish you were here. Now, I did agree, didn't I, with John Ray from Canada, that I would tell you about what you can expect to hear tomorrow. It's Education Day tomorrow when we begin at 8 o'clock with our coverage. That's Eastern Time. That's 12 UTC. We'll be hearing about modern challenges educating blind children. That is a panel. Jay Dowdner is on that panel. He's the moderator of it. We'll have to try and make sure that Jay sticks to time.
That's right.
Dr. Janet Simon's on there as well. She's
my boss.
Oh,
Dr.
she's
Kappen's
Jay's boss. Oh, well, he'll have to behave himself.
Dr. Kappen is his boss.
Director of Western Pennsylvania School for the Blind, Dr. Bernadette Kappen. That's Jay's boss. Yep. Director of the Overbrook School for the Blind. Yes, that's where Jay works. And Susan LaVenture from the National Association of Parents of Children with Visual Impairment. Now, after that, idea reauthorization is the topic. Mark Richard will be talking about that. He is the executive director of the Association for Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind of Silver Springs in Maryland. After the break, we hear the ACB scholarship presentations. Patty Slaby is the chair of that from River Falls, Wisconsin. And then We talk about transitioning from education to employment with Robert Carter, PhD, College Station, Texas. Okay. And following that, we just go and do a little bit of a business and announcements and things. So education, very much the focus tomorrow. At around about 12:30 Eastern, the replay of this session will begin. We appreciate very much you being a part of this broadcast, and we look forward to your company tomorrow as we will be back from the Berg with more of this ACB convention. I'm Jonathan Mosen, wishing you a pleasant afternoon.